ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our Aiken City Council work session on September 27th, 2004. We have three items to discuss. The first one would be the trash program, second, developer agreement for Hitchcock Plaza, and the third would be the developer agreement for the property on Northside. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to Mr. LaDuke.
Thank you, Ms. Mayor. What I'd like to talk about tonight on the trash item, several of you had given me questions concerning the trash pickup as to what we might be able to do to make some changes based on some of the comments you had received. One of the comments was that the cost for someone to have their trash picked up that was not scheduled would be a minimum of $150, and that was excessive. And we would recommend to you that we would consider doubling what a special pickup price would be. So a minimum price for special pickup is $25. That means for a non-scheduled pickup, that would be $50. Fourth of a trailer load would be $100 and on up. Another item that you had mentioned, that one of you had mentioned, was the fact that the landscapers should be able to dump their trash at the location where the homeowner has it collected, which is fine with us if those landscapers want to do that. And the other suggestion was that they would have a designated spot within the city to deposit that material that they collected. We were really not in favor of that because of the fact that they don't just cut lawns and collect shrubbery and other materials inside the city. They do it also outside the city, and then we'd become a dumping grounds for county and city trash at those locations. Another suggestion we had, we looked at some of Tyler Sanitation's operation, and they do allow alongside the roll cart bags and boxes of material that can be lifted into the truck to be picked up at the same time. So for those individuals that have small amounts of material, we could certainly go ahead and handle them that way. Another complaint or suggestion, depending on which way you want to look at it, was about the quarterly pickup. You had voted not to include the quarterly pickup, but to have any construction debris, white goods, furniture, etc., that would be either a special pickup or to have them have it hauled away by a specific hauler. A suggestion that we would make that if we're going to have them have this stuff hauled away, we could go ahead and get a list of names of individuals who are qualified, according to the state, actually the county, that would be qualified trash haulers. They are licensed actually by the county because they have to have a permit to dump at the landfill in the county. Provide that list of names to individuals either when they call or we could have it listed on our website, and that way they would know who to call. Most of the ones that we talked to said that they would even go inside the house and pick up the material. And this is important because some individuals are at the age where they have a hard time bringing it out to the curb anyways. So a lot of those individuals would come into that garage, go into the basement, wherever the material would be, and get it collected and bring to there. We have seen, as a side note, since we started the program, a drop from around 200 hours a month in overtime to approximately 25 hours a month in overtime. So we have seen a major difference in the amount of overtime that we're now paying for individuals. At least in my viewpoint, I went out with a council member. We drove Carlson Park one Friday. Their normal pickup days on a Monday. And on that Friday that we drove, I think we saw two piles, and they were very small piles, that was material that wasn't supposed to be put out there. One was a little bit of carpeting, one was a little bit of lumber. Otherwise, all the mixed piles that used to be out there in Carlson Park in the past, 5 days after pickup, were not there. So we think, in observation of looking around the city, that a lot of what you had wanted, which was a cleaner area, reduction of overtime, and saving some costs to be dealt with. We know some changes probably do need to be made, some adjustments. We're ready and willing to listen and to make those changes as you may want to dictate. Tim is here, who runs the operation day-to-day, and so is Larry, and they would be happy to answer any questions, or unless you have any comments right now.
Our memo pretty well explains the memo that I gave Robert, which did attach to council's memorandum from him. Pretty well explains what we've been doing, how we've been doing it. So, open questions.
The main problem I have is with the leaves and limbs, that the way we used to do it. I know we had all that discussion because of Crossing Park and because of the mix and the refrigerators that were put out and the carpet that were put out because of the, you know, the renters and the landlords dumping the stuff out there. But and I think that should remain exactly the same. The main problem I got with it is the basic pickup of the leaves and the limbs and that 5 cubic. I think there's more confusion on that. I mean, I had one group that helped a lady clean up her yard and put it out. They took one part of it and then did a cross and sent her a bill for $150. I'm just not sure that was in my mind, I think we're a little bit too far on that. I'd like to see us revisit just that one aspect. I think the fees that we're charging to pick up the other stuff is fine, but I think we're just confusing people with the this 5 cubic as far as the leaves and the general. Now, somebody has a commercial truck comes in and starts putting limbs and stuff out. I think that's different. We can handle that differently. If it's a commercial, somebody taking trees down and letting us pick it up, that's different. But as far as the leaves and that sort of thing, I think that's what I've had the major complaints on, just that one issue. If we can go back to the old way of doing things, I think we leave the rest of it alone. We shouldn't be paying for people to pick up their, the refrigerators and those type of thing. That's been the one comment I've had.
Mr. Mayor, that's been my major comment is the amount of yard debris, and it's hard to measure 5 cubic yards of pine straw or the limbs. And of course, I did some in my own yard, and when the truck came by, I happened to be there when he crushed it down. It went down to about a fifth of what it was anyway. And then, of course, the one across the street had a big OX on it, and they didn't take hers, and so you know how that went over. And so I really have a problem. I think we ought to, unless it's an excess, you know, somebody could go in and cut 4 or 5 trees down. But, I mean, just as far as cleaning up the yard, cutting the shrubbery brushes, I think we ought to take all of it. And also, while I'm speaking, I do have a problem with this idea of the quarterly pickup. What are the people going to do with it while they're waiting for their time to come around? I mean, if my wife's washing machine goes out, I buy one today. I don't buy one when my date's up where I can put it out in the yard, you know. So.
My view on the washing machines and the refrigerators and those kinds of things is that you can get them hauled away when you buy a new one.
Well, I agree with that. I'm use that as an example, Mr. Mayor.
I'm all in favor of the quarterly pickup. We talked a lot about that, and I very honestly hate to admit it, but I will. I thought it was in the ordinance when we passed it. And I've had several people tell me that they thought the quarterly pickup would be a very good idea. I think it would be very confusing to get various other haulers and try to get the people to call them. I think we're making this thing so complicated. And the more I get calls, I got 3 in a matter of 30 minutes or an hour when I was home. I think it's so complicated. And one thing that several people have told me is that they combine with their neighbors. They've got one little dumping place, and 3 or 4 neighbors will come and put their stuff there. And it's really easier for the city to pick up one time than to go to 4 different places, which makes sense to me. That's good logic to me. But yet, when you get that, then you get a bigger load, and somebody is going to get charged. And how do you figure out who put what where? I had somebody tell me that just tonight and said, looks like what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to go back to putting it on our own lot, which, in their view, makes it more difficult for city. It's just an extra, 3 more extra pickups, if you will, where you go, plus scraping the road and all the other things that go along with it, than having the one pickup at one spot. So I think that's the concern. And the same as Pat and Don, I got a call tonight about about why are we just saying 5 cubic yards? You know, don't we want Aiken to look nicer? What are the people going to do? They're not going to go out there necessarily and measure it. And I think that's a problem. And this pickup fee of going up to, what, $50 on a small item? Is that what I heard? Or we said $25, didn't we, before?
If they call for a special pickup, it would be $25. But if they just put it out there and they don't call and they expect us to pick it up that week, then we'd have to reverse our route and come back and get it, and there would be a special fee. Right now it's $150 is what council had passed.
Well, it seems so ridiculous. The more I think about it, and I voted for it, so, but the more I'm understanding some of these things from people as they call and talk. Person called me from Woodside. He had 2 or 3 boards, 4 feet long, and they wouldn't take that. And now he's physically able to get a saw and cut them up and put them in his dumpster, which is legal, right? Which I don't understand why you can put things in your dumpster, but yet you can't pick them up. I don't quite understand that yet. I've got a 90-gallon dumpster, and I can put a lot of things in the dumpster, and they'll take it. But some of those things, if I didn't put them in the dumpster, I put them out beside the dumpster, they wouldn't take it, and I'd have an extra cost, extra charge. And I think something's wrong with this picture somewhere. But he had 4 boards, and he had some wall boards, pieces of wall board, and of course they wouldn't pick those up. And one of the people that called me tonight said that they had a new resident that just moved to town, and obviously they didn't know the rules, I guess. And they got notice that they were being fined $400, and the city waived it, I understand. Now, have we started? Are we still in the warning phase?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I think we ought to stay in the warning phase until we can get whatever we want to do squared away, whatever changes we want to make. Were we supposed to change October 1st?
Yes.
I don't think we're going to be able to make any necessary changes, even if council agrees to some of these changes, whatever we talk about the rest of the time here. By then, I don't think we ought to charge people. I can just see so much trouble coming out of this thing. When you start putting these charges on somebody's bill and they don't know about it, and how many is that going to be? If we went ahead the first pickup, I bet you we'd have hundreds if we actually did it.
We can't address that for you, Mayor. When we first started, with August the 8th, actually using door hanger. This is the door hanger that we use. I'd be glad to provide one to each council member.
Well, why don't you do that, Larry?
One of the problems, Larry, is communication. Now, that's communication when you put that on the door, but there's so many people that still don't know the rules.
The rules are back.
But that doesn't go to everybody in the city, does it? That just goes if they...
What we found citywide when we started this, the first time we put them out, we have approximately 200 that we put out. We came back 2 days later, which is what the ordinance says. We will come back 2 days. We got 10 that's citywide. 10 was off. That number has now gone down. Last week we put out 100. We had 3 that we actually had to go back and clean up. This is just with more or less the crib, and we haven't charged. So, you know, we are getting the education out there. People are learning to address the landlord thing. We had one landlord who owns multiple properties who had over periods of time just got used to us coming to that property and cleaning it up. If he had to move out, he'd just throw it out in the front yard. The first time he got one of these, we have not seen a move out from him since.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's great, and that's the way it should be, and he was really taking advantage, or he or she was taking advantage of the situation.
So this is part of our education of what we're doing. We've had some very nice articles in the newspaper on what we can and can't do. The illustration you gave of the wallboard is a great illustration. If someone has a few pieces of wallboard and they put it down there, our guys are supposed to leave it. That's construction debris. We really can't take that and recycle it. That has to be separated out and taken to a different landfill than where we can, what we can do with our yard debris. So the policy is we don't want any construction debris. Why can't it go into garbage? Because the garbage goes to our Three River landfill, which does accept construction debris. Boards. If you have a treated board, let's say you just have one or two boards off of the deck that you needed to remove and replace, by state law, that has to go to Three Rivers, which means you've got to put it in a garbage can for us to pick up. We can't pick that up with Three Rivers. So it's much easier and much clearer for our citizens to know if it's construction debris, dump it. That's much easier than if we give them a laundry list and say, well, if it's two pieces of wallboard, we'll get that, but we won't get six. Or if it's this kind of wood, we'll get that, but we won't get the other kind. If we tell them don't, put it in the garbage, then we know automatically we're obeying state law and federal law, but it's going to Three Rivers. And it's not going to our recycling facility to try to compost, which obviously treated wood doesn't compost. That's the reasoning behind how we phrase our no construction debris pickup. And that's why the gentleman with two or three pieces of wallboard, why he got a notice. Mm-hmm. And what we told folks, I've had folks call me and say, I didn't have a 1 gallon bucket of material out there. I said, great, throw it in a bag and put it in your garbage can. We'll get it. Because that's the landfill it has to go to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But to think of it, to have one board, let's say, or one old toaster or something, and you're going to charge $50 or $25 or $50 or whatever for somebody to come get it.
Mr. Mayor, but the problem is, you can have one toaster and one board, but you can't have, I mean, it's almost like, you know what I'm saying, it's tough.
One thing you could do is have a free pickup every 3 months. That's what Roger LeDuc's family has up in Illinois, right, Roger?
Once a year,
okay.
Mayor,
6 months then.
Mr. Mayor, you said you didn't want to make it complicated. Now, that would be so complicated. How would you find out?
Why would that be complicated?
Every 3 months, what are you going to do with the stuff? It's going to accumulate on the side of the road, knowing that you're going to pick it up.
It's not on the side of the road, though. It's behind your house, under your house, or something.
I think it's complicated because I don't think they're going to know when the three-month time is, and what if they miss that day, and then they've got 3 months of debris out there, and then what are we going to do? I'm sorry I was late, so maybe I've missed this part of the discussion, but when I've talked to people that called me and said the reason we can't have this construction debris out there is because it's so dangerous, and people often have no choice but to put it out several days ahead of time. They don't have help to get it out a few hours before it's picked up. And so it sits out there, and kids play in it. And you know those pictures we had at Crosland Park. I mean, I'm amazed that somebody hasn't gotten badly hurt in some of that stuff that's been out there. And when I've explained that to them, then they've understood that that's the reason we just can't have that stuff sitting on the side of the road. And I told them what you said. Let the paint dry in the can, put it in a black garbage bag, and pretty much anything you can get in a black garbage bag, they will pick up, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Is that general enough?
Correct. And to answer the mayor's comment, you know, if somebody has a toaster out there or something like that, if they get one of these hangers and we say, hey, you've got a problem with this pile, get rid of the toaster, we come back 2 days later, the toaster's gone, we don't send them a bill. We now have a good pile. We pick it up, and we recycle it. All they do is they take the toaster, put it in their garbage bag, and it's gone. And that's the answer we give them.
Have we communicated these kind of details to our citizens?
Especially through our newspaper articles.
It was in our newsletter to everybody.
I know. I know that, and I've told people that. But, you know, until we make sure they understand, we're not really communicating. We can do all these things. People don't read the paper. I found that some of the ladies of the family will pay the bills, and they don't come communicate with the husband, vice versa, and I've heard that too. Thank goodness on one occasion I was told that, well, it was my fault. I should have known that. You know, when I explained that, yes, we did have some information in the water bill, several months, dates back to 03 in some cases, at least one person apologized and said, well, yeah, I should have known that.
One of the things that that does concern me is that if you see a toaster or something, some item on a pile and it's not supposed to be there, you've got to stop and write this?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And how much time does it take to write this?
That is not crew time. That is supervisor's time. And then that supervisor, their job requirement is to come behind the crews and take time to do that. It may take them 5 minutes to do that. They will red X a pile so that they know it has been looked at, and then leave that hanger for the citizen again for communication. We don't want to find anybody. I don't want to get in the business of finding folks. If they'll take the toaster out of the pile, we're going to come get it.
And most people, they're given 48 hours. Most people are taking care of the pile. We come back 2 days later, they've either separated out the problem and got rid of it, or the whole pile is gone. So they call us and ask, what's wrong with my pile? So it's coming back by.
I guess the thing that worries me the most are our senior citizens that don't even understand some of this stuff that we're talking about, you know, and furthermore, not physically perhaps, can get out and do some of those things.
Because I'm looking at this front and back, and you've got 9 items in small print. It's one from column A, one from column B. If no column A, then go to column C. You know, it's that kind of thing for them. They're just not understanding all of the ordinance language here. It's not, and because there are so many different ways to do it, there probably isn't a short way to write this out. This probably is the shortest way to write this out. And it is causing confusion. But I'm thinking that if it takes you 5 minutes to tell me I've got a toaster in my trash pile, it probably, with a pair of gloves, won't take you 30 seconds to pick it up and throw it where it belongs and take everything away. And I know you're not supposed to do that, but I keep thinking we're still in the South and we still do things neighborly, we still do things kind of common sense-like. And maybe we'll paint ourselves in a corner if we do too much of that and people will never learn. But I think it's what people are looking for is that, gee, I made a small mistake and nothing gets picked up. The second thing is this. When we pick up the trash, the straw and the leaves and those kinds of things, we sometimes take grass with us. And so some of the neighbors get together and use a common site so that everybody doesn't have a bald spot, then just one person has a bald spot. And so because they go over the limit for one house, nothing gets picked up even if it's 2 or 3 people using the same pile. Is there any way we can perhaps, because we do, and I get complaints about come and see what the city did. I do get those calls about coming to see that the grass has been taken up, and you know, and I said, well, you know, I got the same stuff, but I deal with it. Is there a way we can just know or identify this as a common site and go ahead and remove it?
We have talked to several folks who do have common sites and assured them that we will pick up whatever's on that site, whatever volume is there. And our drivers then know about that common site, or care about that site. The only thing that we have asked, and some folks have this, some have not, is where we have a common site, what we'd like to do is put a small concrete pad there so we're not constantly stamping the grass. And in that way, that also clues the driver in when he sees that, hey, there's going to be more here than just a normal household. So with that being the case, that's another good sign. Some folks like that concrete pad because it is a good site for them. Some folks have said, no, we'd rather not have that. So we do have that in operation, and we have notified folks that have talked to us about it. Now, again, has that been put out in broadcast? No, it has not. But as we've talked to folks, and I think our success rate has been very well. You know, we've gone through, essentially have the problems that we've seen through talking to people and getting the word out that way. It seems to be working. And if you look at the overtime that we've got, just like your comment about the toaster, I totally agree. It would probably take 30 seconds just to throw it up in there. But when it comes to teaching my children, it's best if I say, okay, I can do that for you, but if you do it, you remember it. Now, we're going to come back. We're going to get the pile. You get rid of the toaster. We're going to take care of the pile for you. But then they'll remember if they don't do it again. Now, is that a good way to do it? I don't know. I'm just being that.
Yeah, it's probably a good way to do it, but it's I mean, we're getting complaints and that. And you know, it seems like we're trying to be frivolous with it, but I think I understand your teaching part of that. I understand that. I'm just telling you that I think that's part of what's going on, is that they're not understanding why we're being picky, I think is the word I've heard, why we're being so picky about it. Why not just move it? It takes less time to pick it up and put it where it belongs in the dust to write this up if you're not charging me anyway.
One item, that's probably true, but it's all about drawing a line for my crew. I mean, what if it's 7 flower pots? Now they spent 15 minutes. It's that 5 minutes to throw that one toaster up. There's got to be some area that you do that you don't.
Mm-hmm. You know? And we're trying to get it all. The trash crew cannot throw that toaster up. They do not go to Three Rivers Landfill. The garbage crew must throw that toaster up. So if there's stuff mixed with that pile of material, then we've got to have garbage crew stop and separate it. Get the bad stuff, throw it up, and then a trash crew can get the rest of it. That was part of our problem, why this ordinance came about in the first place. We were having to take everything to Three Rivers.
Which is driving your cost up.
Which is costing a fortune.
That drives the cost.
One other thing I think is real important is we've got roughly 10,000 pounds, and we're putting out 100 of these hangers a week, so we're talking 1%. And out of those 100 we put out, only 3 or 4 are not compliant, so we're talking very small.
Mr. Mayor, I want to mention one other thing, and it might be legal, about providing the list for people who might even come into your homes to take things out. Do we want to do that?
I personally think it's more confusing, but maybe it'll work.
I mean, what if we give them a list and then somebody...
Oh, coming in your home.
I don't know that anybody at the city would actually be saying, if you need something picked up out of your house, then this guy will do it for you. I mean, that's not going to be good for the city.
All we would do is provide a list of waste haulers that are already permitted by the county. In other words, for me as an individual to go to the county and dump off on a consistent basis construction debris, I have to be licensed. And so there is a list of individuals that we could provide to them. They would have to contact them. If they worked out an agreement between them to pick it up in a certain manner, that's between them. All we're saying is here's a list of individuals that are already licensed by the county.
So we know they won't pick up their stuff and dump it somewhere else that
that's
you don't
correct.
Want it to be.
Right.
And that, to me, would be a big help, because then they wouldn't have to advertise in the paper. I mean, if you could leave that list on the pile, either we'll pick it up, or, you know, item 6 is really so important, and it's kind of hard to pick out of the bunch here, because whenever everybody calls me, they always call about $150 or $400. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
And there's nothing ever about $25, and I keep saying, well, I remember $25. We talked a lot about $25, you know, and but they don't get to items. They don't get to that side of the thing, and somehow if that, I mean, I don't want to tell you your business, but maybe I do. If that could be on the front, you know, that if you have trash that needs to be picked up, either call us, these are the rates, or we've got a list of licensed people. I don't know if I'm getting off the subject, but the big complaint I've gotten lately is not about the trash, because, like I said, most people, when you explain that it's been so dangerous and been so awful in some neighborhoods, pretty much understand. It's about people are cleaning out their yards now, and limbs are falling, and they think they've got way more than what's allowed for the limbs and the leaves. And I'm wondering if we need to have a limit. Do we have
That's just what Don and I were talking about. That's the one problem I got. And I guess the question comes in, whenever you take something away that you've been providing free,
I know.
That's what we're up against here. And I don't know of a whole lot of cities that pick up construction debris. I've talked to a lot of people, and it says, you know, if you want it the way it was, you're going to pay more. Now, do you want to pay because people are leaving all their construction debris out? I think it's a matter of just drawing a line of sand. I would like to see us go back to the other way, pick up the leaves and the limbs and all that, and don't go this far, but keep the thing on the limits. And also, Mr. Mayor, put the files in. If you have something small enough, if it's a toaster, bag it up and put it in the trash can, and we'll pick it up. If you just inform them of that, then we'll be fine. But for us to go back and start trying to say we're going to pick this amount up, it makes your job impossible.
Mr. Mayor, let me.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sitting here thinking that for months we've had folks to come into these chambers and express concern about trash. How their neighborhoods were looking, trash problems. And then we come up with a solution, we think.
Well, we knew there'd be problems.
That addresses the trash problems. And the calls that I'm having is, you know, how much is 5 cubic yards? That's one call. And then, as Jane has spoken, the other extreme was, I've been fined $400. I had this call before coming over here. It ended up being reduced. So we've got to come up with a happy medium here. I came in here in support, Mr. Mayor, as you said, of one free trash pickup a quarter. And the concern that I had was, what date do you give these folks? This is the last day of every month in terms of that free pickup. But there are folks that called me to seem to welcome the idea of one free pickup per quarter. So that's been receptive to folks. But they've also talked about leaves and limbs and how, depending on your yard size, you can accumulate so much of that. A small piece of property said no problem, so we should have some leverage there in terms of the size of the lot and not have a requirement there as it relates to leaves and limbs and what they rake up there. So those are the concerns that I've had expressed to me, but I don't think we want to be back where we were with people coming in concerned about trash pickup based on what Larry has said in his memo here, that it seems like we have come up with a solution that's working, but what is a happy medium we can all live with is the big question at this point.
Larry, have you had to write a lot of warnings for too much yard debris?
Not too much yard debris at all. That has not been the warnings that we've given. The warnings have been for the mixed piles. And again, I will admit very much up front, we drew a very straight line in the sand and said no construction debris. If it was 3 boards or 4 boards, we gave them a warning. If it was a single toaster, I think it's a great example, they would give a warning. But we've gone from 200 down to 100. With the 200, we only picked up 10 piles that were still bad piles. With 100, we picked up 3 or 4.
Larry, I like what one of your workers told one of my neighbors. He said, what do you put in that pile? And he told her, said, if it grows in the yard, we'll pick it up.
Exactly.
That worked pretty good.
I had asked him, see, we did have a 90-gallon rollout up here in our break room for our recycles. 90-gallon rollout is 1 cubic yard. I can sit that in front of you, and if you can visualize 5 of those, that's a lot of material. And is it up there swinging the team?
It's full now. They haven't unloaded that yet.
When we had those 8 meetings or 12 or 15, whichever it was you had about trash, it wasn't about leaves and it wasn't about limbs. It was about mixed use. It was about carpet. It was about all the jam. We saw them all. I went and looked at them. Everybody here went and looked at them. It wasn't about leaves and limbs. And I remember we put the 5 cubic yard thing on, and that's about the leaves and limbs. That's when we should have caught that. That was not the problem with the trash. The trash was the other stuff, and we need to keep. I agree with you. We got to keep the teeth in that one, or else it's going to go back to the other way.
Mm-hmm. Larry, you mentioned that you're only seeing a small percent, and it's going down.
Yes, sir.
Now, that doesn't mean, though, that next week those who have not done it before won't all of a sudden do it for the first time.
That's correct.
I mean, you could keep this thing going for a year. Different people finally realizing. I think most of our problem has been communication, like putting a toaster in a bag, putting it in the dumpster, putting it in your cart or whatever. I've got one of those 90-gallon carts. I love it because I can put all kinds of stuff in there. So that solves my problems. And I can saw up a piece of lumber if I've got it, and I can put it in there. Right? You can put anything in there. I mean, not grease or paint or anything like that. So that solves my problems. So I'm not concerned. But I'm thinking of those who are physically unable to do that, and also, well, the older senior citizens as well, who are physically unable to do that. And when they see a charge coming on their water bill, I'm just real concerned about the uproar that we're going to see when that comes in. And we're going to see it, because a lot of folks are still not getting the word. I think we need to do a much better job, and I think y'all have done a super job already. But in other words, communications, you know, it's never perfect. I think we need to communicate a lot more and in detail and give some of these examples, exactly what we've talked about. If you've got something like a toaster or something small like that, you know, do something else with it. Put it in the plastic bag or whatever.
Do you have some suggestions on how we could communicate other than writing?
Let's talk trash.
Well, we communicate like this. What's wrong with putting one of these on everybody's door?
Well, Beverly just said this is pretty complicated.
Well, do it simpler.
You know.
Or do it somehow. I think short of going to every doorknob, and still people are not going to read it. I recognize that.
But like, if are they going to read that if they don't read the newsletter?
Right.
I don't know, but at least we're trying. The calls I've gotten, the emails and what have you, it's I didn't know that. I didn't understand this. The city hasn't communicated this. Well, regardless, I mean, you can sit there and argue with them if you want to and say, yeah, we've been talking about this for a year. But we're not communicating until the person understands what we're saying, and then we understand that person, then we've got communications, in my view.
I think putting it on the pile itself is the best way to communicate, and maybe this is a little, with the $150, $200, I don't know. I think that's a little harsh, frankly. I think I'd rather see something. We can no longer pick up solid waste. You may either call us and we will try and then do item 6 on the back. You know, we will no longer pick up mixed piles or solid waste. That's what we said. Mm-hmm. If you want it picked up by the city, call us. We will arrange a time, and these will be the charges.
Or separate your piles.
Or don't put solid waste out. Now, I want to say something else, too. I don't want to give up backyard pickup, because, see, if I want to put all my stuff in a black plastic bag, then it can be in the backyard, and it won't be out in the front yard looking awful for that whole time. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And a lot of people do still have backyard pickup, and they could be reminded that anything that you are able, that is not a battery or oil, that you get into a black plastic garbage bag, of no more than 33 gallons, probably, because I guess they're bigger ones, that y'all would pick. I don't know. I just think there could be, like you said, a simpler way to get to the gist of how do you get rid of this stuff. But I don't think we want to go back either to where people that never put stuff out or insist that the people that deliver their refrigerator take the old one away and pay extra for it are paying so that somebody else can dump all their stuff on the side of the yard. That's not fair, and I don't think any of us want to go back to that. So
the city channel is a good way of getting the message out, but a voiceover rather than just seeing the script, someone using their voice to communicate the information. You don't need to read everything that's on this collection yard material script here, but in lay term, what's there? Get a nice voice like Roger LaDuke to read.
That would cover a certain percentage of people that look at the channel.
Mr. Brody had a comment. I
think did you have something you'd like to offer us?
Then we need to move on if they kept saying items.
Okay, and then we've got to move on. We've got two more.
Wade Brody, 422 York Street. I'd like to plead guilty. I cut my grass the other day and put it out and cut some limbs. And I had two rotten boards on my fence, picket fence, 6-foot boards. I took those off, and by the time I was getting ready to put them on the pile, the truck came by. When I attend all these meetings, and I read the newsletter on the water bill, and I read the newspaper, but I frankly didn't know. I had, not observed that you can't put construction material out with your limbs. So my observation is you're going through a learning process, and it's going to be a lengthy learning process. And, some people don't read what you send them, and the best way for them to learn is to be told. And I do think it'd be a mistake for the city to start picking out a little item here, a little item there, because you drift back.
To where we were.
Yeah. Other observation is that, as a homeowner, except in the case of an ice storm, I can't envision an average homeowner exceeding the quarter, the 5 cubic yards or quarter of a dump the truck with debris.
You mean yard trash?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people will say they will. They do too.
Well, and, to me, that's an awful lot of.
I cut down three little trees the other day, but it far exceeded the 5 cubic yards. So I divided it up into three piles. And it took me 3 weeks to get it taken away. I take a pile every Monday and stick it up there in the morning. I got rid of it. No problem. I can do that.
Yeah.
But again, it gets back to those that can't do it, and we're going to surprise them with a big fee on their water bill and threaten to cut their water off if they don't pay it.
Communication.
Wait, I get back to the thing. That's not where the problem came from. And I think Larry said that's not where the problem is on the large. If they're doing it, they're doing it as a group, and it's a very occasional thing, somebody cleaning that much up. So I think that's what we need to revert back to, saying, listen, folks, we need to look at going back where we'll pick up the yard and the leaves and do that, but then keep it. Mr. Mayor, I don't agree that we need to do it once a quarter free, because I think that all it does is confuse them again. And to keep it simple, and I think it's going to be a while, people will learn that we're not picking up any construction debris or any other debris for free. That's what we got to get out. And if they can put it in the trash can, fine. But if they can't, then they're going to get charged for it.
Okay. I go back on the record. I think we ought to do it every 3 months.
But if they don't even know the rules now, how are they going to know what day every 3 months if they don't read anything?
That can be communicated easy enough. Hey, we communicate using our recycle bins on holidays and that kind of stuff. How do people know that they're not going to get picked up on a holiday?
Mr. Mayor, they put it out before, then what do? We fine them?
48 hours, don't we say that?
Right, but no. Think about this now.
We're
going to do it for free on once a quarter, but
when
you pick it out, you're going to pick it up and fine them.
When this was passed, remember we talked about the 24 versus 48 hours? That was not addressed here. So
right.
They put it out in 7 days because we've been there 7 days. So we could conceivably sit there for 7 days before we come by and get it. Pat, to answer your question, let's say they put it out 3 weeks before their time period, then they're going to get one of these.
And get fined. And you're going to pick it up.
What this has done, and this is an excellent communication device, they have 48 hours. They have 2 days to get it cleaned up and get the bad stuff out and gone. And then they're not going to see it fine. And that's the whole reason behind this door hanger. Is it is communication. And it is a very good communication tool because if somebody sees it and says, "Ooh, I didn't know about that. I've got 2 days to get this fixed," then it's not going to cost me a dime. We have had that very successfully. Again, 200 down to 10, 100 down to 3. That means that 97% of the people are saying, "Oh, I didn't know that. I'll take care of the problem." Now, those 3%, maybe they're either ne'er-do-wells or maybe they've already moved to Augusta. Yeah. We don't know. But of those three, then, we did have to go back and show the bad
time. How many other cities in South Carolina pick up free stuff, construction debris, the things we have picked up for free? None. That's not
right.
We just got to tell folks we can't afford this anymore. That's why we went through this whole debate about how much more can we raise it, and we're also losing money. That's why we went through it. So, Mr. Mayor, I understand what you're saying about the one free. I'm against it.
Okay. I'd rather keep picking it up in the backyard instead of having the one
free. Okay. I may be the only one for it, but I'm a fine for it.
Are we going to drop restrictions on the yard waste or what?
That's what I would like to see that.
Let me make this suggestion. That we drop the restrictions on the yard waste, that we would change the ordinance that would say there would be no limit on it right now, and we could try that for a period of time.
Yeah, see what happens.
We'll also go ahead and provide a list of people that they want some to haul off for them, that we'd have that readily available. We could either email it to them, we could mail it to them, we could fax it to them, or if they have none of those places to get it, we'll hand it to them. We could change this, and we can make some corrections on this, but it has gotten the attention of people, and they have called us back, and because of that, around 3% of them have not cleaned it up, 97% have cleaned it up. It's been a very good tool. What we will continue doing is we're going to stop October 1st for those 3% that weren't doing it properly and starting to bill them. What we'll do is continue for the next several months, continue with this thing. As Tim and Larry said, we've gone from 200 to 100 until we think we get to a reasonable period, and then we'll come back to you and let you know that the warning would no longer take place. But let them warn them, and that way, not only do they know about it, but most of the time they tell their neighbors, "Did you know what happened to me?" And "You know what happened to me?" And we are seeing a difference in that. But I think the yard waste, that should not be a problem, increasing the amount that we pick up. It's also confusion for our folks, too. Is that 5 cubic yards? Is that 6? Is it 4? This way, if we just say there's no limit, and we'll see how that works. And if it doesn't seem to work well, then we'll come back to you again next year and talk again about it. As far as the quarterly pickup, that's something council will have to decide. Whether you want to consider that or not. Again, all I could say is that we have gone down and reduced our overtime, and if we could reduce that overtime, reduce our costs, then hopefully that means we won't have to keep going up on the fees the same way we've been in the past. Not saying we won't, but not saying we hopefully won't have to go up.
But we're
like
not
we
right. Yeah.
Is there anything else that you definitely want us to do? Again, the list of the haulers, the no limit on the yard waste. Do you want us to go ahead and consider the quarterly? Is there consider 4 times a year going out and saying, put out whatever you want to on the street and we'll pick it up?
No, I don't know.
But we're not, Larry said, we're not having any problem with the big debris, so why bring it back out? I mean,
well, you keep going back to this 3%. And that's fine with those people on that given week. But then you start all over again the next week, and you could have another group of people. And they may not be the same 3%. They may be the other folks that don't understand. And the next week, there's another group that doesn't understand. So I don't think that I think we've got to be very careful with saying 97% of the people understand.
We didn't say that.
Well, what did you say? What does this 97% mean then?
Let me, 97%. We handed out 100 of these tickets. Of those 100, 97% of them, or 97 out of the 100, within 2 days removed the material that wasn't supposed to be in the pile, so we were able to go back and pick the pile. Only three of them did not follow the ordinance.
Okay, so that's, how many of these did we hand out? 100?
100.
200? Okay, that's 100 out of
10,000.
Okay, so next week you could have another 100 that didn't get it.
Awesome.
Right? And then the following week you could have another 100. There are more people out there that don't understand this. I'm convinced of that. So, never mind. I've said my piece. Now, what did we decide on the costs?
Right now, the fines are that if those three individuals that did not go ahead and remove the material, if they did not remove the material within 2 days and we had to go back out and make a special pickup, currently it's $150 minimum. We could certainly lower that to a lower amount. Or we could just kind of wait and... because right now, if you're saying don't find them anyways, but right now, again, these are the 3% that have not removed that material. They may have moved, they may be gone. We were suggesting the memo that I gave you to reduce that significantly from 150 down to 50, 100, 150, and 200.
I think that would be better.
50? We're talking about one board going to cost the person $50, right?
No.
25.
Five cubic yards cost the
If they don't
bucks.
Move it.
Well, I collect things in one spot, and when I get a lot of things, I'll either call someone to pick it up, or I'll call the city and ask them to arrange a time. I mean...
Well, Jane, I understand that. I would do the same thing, but there are a lot of people that are not going to understand that and not going to do that. Leslie, do you think you're going to have any problems?
Yes.
Beverly, you think you are? I know I am. I already have had. And if you don't think you're going to have problems, then I think...
No, I think what we have to do... This is the question. Does the city responsible, the only city in South Carolina that picks up construction debris and refrigerators and whatever? That's the question. We think we should pick them up free once a quarter. I don't. I think we'll try to watch our costs.
Okay, we settle that issue. I'm the only one, I guess, that thinks that. So
if that's the case, then what are we talking about?
I'm talking about the other thing that you're talking about charging $150 for. That it could cost somebody $150.
But he's got
a quarter of a trailer load.
He's got to have 15 cubic yards or 3/4 of a trailer load.
Okay, how about $50?
$50 is 5 cubic yards a quarter. The only thing is, a single item is $25. If you have one board, I guess that's the question. I mean, if you put out one board, you get charged $25, right?
That's if you call, right? If they don't pick it up, if you don't call and you pick it up the next go round. It's 50.
If after 2 days they don't remove it from the pile.
Right.
So we're giving them a grace period to go ahead and remove it,
okay.
Put it in a black bag, do something with it.
What we're suggesting is lowering the $150 fee, and if you would, to just flip over the card on the back where it says 50, 25, 50, 100, 150, 200, and just using those fees right there. If we have to come out and they have not removed it after getting this hanger, that is what we would use.
Larry, if I'm out of town, if you notice it's still on the door, you know they hadn't seen it, right?
Yes.
And do you still go ahead and take it and charge it? Would you still go ahead and take it, knowing that they hadn't seen this?
If it's still on the door, we're going to be trying to contact someone there.
Okay.
Where we have found they are still on the doors, where we have an empty building and there's been a move out, then we don't have any idea who the landlord is, and then it becomes a problem for us to even track down who that is. So that's been something, I don't know if Tim, you can address this, has really been a problem for us. If somebody's living there, they see these things.
Larry, what about the dollar range in $25 incremental increase? $25, $50, $75, $100, $125.
The main thing, and that's why we went with the other listing on the back, is as you're getting up to the larger amounts, half of the freighter load, 5 to 10 cubic yards. That does take considerable time. Think about it this way. The machines we use, the tanks we use, each scoop of that is about 2 yards. So it would take 3 scoops of that tank to get 5 yards. So that tank's going to be there a while on an average. But that's why we went to the larger dollar figure rather than just 550, 7500.
Okay.
Okay. Larry, one more time. Help me. Educate me. Using these on the back, starting with $25, if they haven't moved it, and you have to come back out and get it, it's $25 or is it $50 for a single piece?
If they have not moved it, and we have given them one of these and said, you are illegal,
right,
take those numbers on the back and double them. If it's a single item, it's a poster in a pile, it's all $50. If it's up to 5 cubic yards, a quarter of a trailer load, it can cost them up to 100. So all we're saying is take those numbers and double them, and in that way, it's very easy for them to see what the cost would be, rather than having two totally different numbers here.
All right, go over that. Give me the numbers again that you...
I'm sorry.
What are you suggesting? Are you suggesting keep it the way it is, or...
The way it is...
These numbers here is what it would actually cost us to do it if they got a point.
Just the way it is on the back.
All right.
If they do not call us and it's illegal, and they get a yellow piece on their door hanger,
right, 8 feet wide,
and they do not clean it up, then we would double what's in white on the back.
Here, this one,
and that way, it's a very simple way to do it.
That sounds good.
Lots. That way, we're not charging somebody $150 for a touch.
Okay, so do you intend to continue to do this all the time with this on the door hanger? Not just through the period, the warning period.
They will get this. 2 days later, we will be back. And like I say, what we're finding 97% of the time right now is that pile has been cleaned up, and what's there we can pick up. And they don't get charged for nothing.
Okay, now when you say we'll be back, is that a pickup truck coming back to check, or is that the big truck coming back to get it?
That is right now the grapple.
Okay. How much is that costing just to come back and check? Well, never mind.
More than we like, but until we get the learning process completed, you know, that's the penalty we have to pay to go ahead and educate the public. Hopefully someday we don't have to go back at all, hardly.
Okay, we got to move on.
If they want to have communal piles, I want to clarify this, though. They need to call your department and say, we would like to have a communal pickup location, right? So there's no trouble. And
if we change it, though, Jane, it won't matter on the leaves and trees.
Oh, that's right, it won't matter.
That won't even matter.
Would you ever consider, and I know I've talked to Roger about this, but several lawn services have asked me that they leave the debris on the side of the road by each house, that they thought it would be easier if it was back at their place, you know. Could they call you and talk to you about that?
We really don't want to do that. We have had that used before. Where they work out in the county, too.
Yeah.
They'll bring it back to their place, and we have quite literally picked up complete trailer loads.
Ugh.
And they say, oh, yeah, this is all the city. Well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't.
All right.
We've even caught tree trimmers quote two different prices if the citizen will say they did the work. And we'll go up and talk to the 70-year-old lady who had pine trees around, and she said, I put them out there. It's happened. I'm not. That's the main reason why we
okay.
Five cubic yards never come into play for the normal resident.
No. Okay.
It's for landscapers.
Okay. Larry, Tim, thank you for what you're doing. I know this is a tough issue, and we all recognize that. We appreciate what you're doing. Okay, our second item is the developer agreement for Hitchcock Plaza.
Yes, hopefully this is going to be a little bit easier. Cameron, you want to raise your hand back there? Has been working with us. His firm has purchased Hitchcock Plaza. You asked us several months ago to work out some agreements to keep this as a viable shopping center since Kroger's is going to be moving out. Of course, Kmart has moved out. We have attached a developer's agreement for you to review. The main items that are in there, if you look at the agreement itself, is really item concerning the engineering of the roadway, and that is item number four. And what they're asking us to do is take Fabian Drive, which comes out to Silver Bluff Road, approximately where R&M Music is at, opposite Old Town, and engineer a roadway that would curve its way into approximately where Pawnee is at right now. Pawnee is where Kentucky Fried Chicken and Southside Galleries are at. That's Pawnee coming into Fabian. To take that road and to make this a boulevard, a tree-lined street with curb and gutter throughout that whole area, they're asking, would we be willing to go ahead and do the engineering for this? We have done the engineering and actually have built on a couple of different occasions roads through developments, one of them being by the hospital. That roadway along the hospital past Hitchcock Healthcare, we helped engineer and paid for part of that. We did Centennial Drive. In other words, we have provided some economic incentives in the past. They would go ahead and plant all the trees, and then we would select the type of trees that would go out there. So it would be the engineering of it and purchasing the trees. They, in turn, would go ahead and give us the right-of-way and actually build the road itself. There's a couple of other areas concerning storm drainage. We felt that would be no problem whatsoever on the storm drainage, as long as the equivalent amount of storm drainage that was in the pond would stay equal to what it was before, and they would have to fill in the necessary areas for any work that they had to do. We're here to answer any other questions you may have concerning it. If council is ready, we would have this on the next agenda, or we are ready to make any changes, and Cameron is here to assist or answer any questions you may have concerning that development.
Roger, question. The road that we're talking about, Fabian, that is part of the shopping center, or is that a city, street, county, state?
Well, currently there is no road. This road would be, if it gets built, it would become a city road.
A Fabian Drive.
Yes.
It's there now.
Well, Fabian Drive stops right now right near where Goody's parking lot is at.
Yeah. Okay.
And this new Fabian Drive would come all the way out to Silver Bluff Road and become a city street.
Okay.
Right now, Fabian Drive, that few hundred feet that we have in the city, there's no trees on it, there's no curb and gutter, there's nothing. And so this would be a first-class road going all the way out to Walmart. And they are working with Walmart, and they're willing to talk to them about seeing if we get this all the way to Olahit Road.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have a road all the way now from Whiskey to Silver Bluff.
Roger, that was one of the questions I had. Some of the things we've done with these connector roads are exactly what we need to do, but they don't provide safe ingress and egress or whatever. Should we bite the bullet now and say, okay, let's design this road where it should go, and God forbid, even look at some condemnation to make it a road that goes to the right spot, to a traffic light that would then connect in over to the mall? Those type of questions. Do we do that now, or do we... And I'd just like to see exactly where this road's going to wind out. The key to this is getting it to Daugherty Road, I think, eventually, and make it the ingress and egress, give yourself another way to get to the shopping center. You understand my question?
Yeah, we're talking about two different roads. Fabian Drive would be from Silver Bluff to Whiskey, and then you're looking at Pawnee possibly going from Pine Log Road to Daugherty.
Right.
And they're willing to work with us. It's a question of how much right-of-way we would need. We might even have to go across the detention pond in some way if we wanted to eventually get one to Daugherty Road. But what's on the table tonight in front of you is Fabian Drive, and that would not be going to Daugherty.
Okay.
But Pawnee, and again, that's item... item number 12. They are willing to work with us and a feasible support securing the right-of-way. They own the property back there now, just they need egress to their property with delivery trucks.
Mm-hmm.
So if we want to put a road back there, is this going to get in the way, or do we need to go ahead and buy right-of-way from Gillum? I think Associates may own the property between there and Fabian.
I guess what I'm thinking is the road that Kentucky Fried Chicken's on is going to be at where the new Kroger is.
That's correct. There'll probably be a light there.
There'll be a light there. Now, this is what I envision. If you can somehow connect that road in, go behind the old Kmart somehow, and then there's a detention there. It's going to take some work. But paralleling Whiskey Road and getting to Darby Road is extremely important. So I think we need to try to work this whole thing, and then how does it tie in? And the other thing I'd like to see at a future meeting is kind of draw on a map that showed the city council how we try to tie that into Darby and how we could try to tie it in the next road into the mall area.
When is Roger Dyer going to have that map ready? Okay. We had asked Roger Dyer several months ago we had given him some proposals on connecting Whiskey to Silver Bluff, Pine Log to Doherty, and Hamilton. Take Hamilton and extend it on out.
Right.
And so he's been studying for the last couple of months and came by about a week ago and did a number of traffic counts. So we should have that probably for the next meeting to see what we have. But we agree with you, Pat.
Okay.
What does number 13 mean?
Number 13. It means that if in the future any impact fees, water and sewer, would be for new development or something over and above what he has now.
Right.
So if he takes the Kmart and all of a sudden adds 10,000 square feet more to it, then he would only have an impact fee on the 10,000 square feet, not on the rest of the development.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that the way it's written then?
That's the way 13 is written.
I know, but wouldn't that comply with the current?
It does. We just wanted to put it in writing so that their development firm would understand and that there would be no question.
In case we change things.
There would be no question.
How much is this? I mean, I think it sounds great. How much is it going to cost?
The engineering should be just a few tens of thousands of dollars. We're not sure if we're talking, but I would say estimate between $15,000 and $25,000. Each of the trees, because of the size we're going to get, are probably going to be about $125 each. And now Tom might be able to get them in bulk and get them cheaper than that. So we're probably talking again another $10,000-$15,000 for the trees. But again, the nice thing about that is we could then decide should they be a laurel oak or do we want magnolias along there? You know, what kind of trees we want to have, and we'll select them and we'll get the caliber that we want. They in turn will go ahead and plant them and put the irrigation in.
Well, this is what we need to be doing more of, and so I'm certainly in favor of doing these items.
Okay. Cameron, I'm sorry, did you want to add anything, or are we doing fine so far?
Okay, did council agree that the staff goes ahead with this?
Yes.
Plans? Okay. All right.
This will be on the agenda then for first reading at the Gary, does it take two readings or one reading for developer's agreement?
Two
readings. Okay, it'll be first reading in October and then second reading the last meeting in October. So we'll have this ready for you the next meeting. The next item we have here is another, I didn't write up the developer's agreement because what we're asking here is something we've talked about in the past, but we haven't really come up with any firm decisions on. Samantha Charles is here tonight. Watch. And she has decided to go ahead and buy some property up on Marion Street, and not only this wooded section, but several other properties along that area to help with the renewal that we have, and because she thinks that some nice cottages would be very nice in that area. And I think you had a package. Yeah, why don't you go ahead and the main thing, and the water and sewer we have done in the past, you know, where we upfront the money, put water and sewer in, and then they pay us back as the development occurs. That's something we've done in the past successfully. It's worked out very well in the past. What we're talking about here that's a little different is Marion Street, which is a 150-foot wide right-of-way.
It's a great thing.
And it's got several large mature trees in there. Do you go in there and cut down a number of the trees to put a regular 30-foot wide roadway with clearing the right-of-way for water and sewer, or do you even more so put in a parkway in there with two roads going down it, or do you allow them to have a private drive to these cottages? Or the other option is, do you take the right-of-way and split it between the two adjoining owners, 75 feet to each one, and put restrictions on saying the trees have to stay, but you could have this area to maintain, keep the trees in there, and make it part of the property. So those are some of the decisions that are before council tonight is, would you agree on the water and sewer, but more so, what do we do with the right-of-way on Marion Street? I talked to George Anderson, who owns the property on their side, and he is willing to work with the city in any way that we'd want to concerning that right-of-way. And what they've given you tonight is a package of what they hope this would look like, the cottages that they want to put in here. It looks like it'd be very, very tastefully done, what they have proposed. I think something that everybody in the city would enjoy in the fact that these would be in the style of the 1920s, 30s cottages that you've seen on the north side.
Mm-hmm. Roger, I agree with you. I think that this will be a wonderful added addition to that area, that street, Baldwin Avenue, has some needs, mm-hmm. and this is just the beginning of some needs to be met. And I think it looks very attractive and respect what they're trying to do here in this area.
What is council feeling on the right-of-way of Marion Street? I think that's the biggest question.
What do you think? I mean, what's your opinion professionally as a precedent, as a...
We talked about it with staff, Ed and I. We have mixed feelings. One feeling is to take the 150-foot right-of-way and to divide it between the two property owners. Then they have the liability and the responsibility then to maintain that 75 feet and becomes part of their property. It then becomes part of their taxable property, mm-hmm. and it's probably never going to be used.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's one side. Mm-hmm. That's probably my dollar and cent side. The other side of me says, once you give it away, you never give back. And you got this 150-foot right-of-way with the mature trees. Is Marion Street ever going to go ahead and go across the playing fields and Schofield so it connects up with Marion Street on the other side of Abbeville? Probably not, but I don't know what's going to happen 50 years from now, 100 years from now. All I do know is once you give it away, you don't get it back. But saying all that, right now we have no use for Marion Street, and what they're trying to do here is a great project.
And in return, there would be some design guidelines. These design guidelines would be, and we would, that's what we would get in return.
The council
right.
could ask for whatever they want to. I think Samantha and Chuck would be willing to do just about anything because what I've seen, they want to do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to put out there what is going to be great for the marketplace. It just... They would probably, and I shouldn't speak for you, but they would probably prefer to get the 75-foot right-of-way. That way they could incorporate that with their design and add a little bit more value to their property. But again, they're willing to work with the council in whatever we come together on. And I don't want to, maybe you want to say it.
Would you like to, Samantha or Charles, would you like to say a few words about it?
Please come up.
If you would, just tell us who you are again for the record, if you would.
And where you decide to live.
I understand I'm going to live in Aiken. I live in Florida right now, but I've decided to invest up here. I have a lot of friends who play polo, and I've been coming up for years for polo. And it's sort of my one foot out of the door in Florida, and if it works out well, then hopefully sell my place there and come here. But I really like restoring the old cottages, and so a girlfriend and I started doing that, and while doing that, I found this wonderful wooded piece, and I thought, well, gee, wouldn't it be nice to build new houses that look old, and then they would have all the new stuff, but they would still have that quaint old look. So that's how this whole thing started. And then you'll notice in that booklet we found a really neat article in Cottages magazine where they had done actually a little bit different. It was a pocket community where they kind of made almost like a condominium community. But it's beautiful and interesting and something we hadn't exactly thought of doing, but I wanted to put it in there because it had the same feel of what we're trying to do. This lot that we bought, that Chuck and I bought together, is wooded, and we went in and cleared out all the brushy stuff and kept all the big trees, and it's really a beautiful, beautiful lot. So exactly how many cottages we put in and where we put them will depend a lot on the trees. So we put 6 to 8 cottages, thinking that probably 6 will fit in there best. It was actually originally plotted to have 13, but that's a little tiny lot, so we don't want to do that. But basically, we just want a really cute little wooded community. A lot of our friends have already bought on that 2 blocks of Marion Street. We've got about 5 friends who've already bought there and love those cottages and have started fixing them up. And we just kind of want to do the same thing.
I think your designs are nice. Rob's the only problem I have with this, and this is, I'm very much in favor of this, but are we setting a precedent here of development incentives on basic private land? We have 4 or 5 of them going on right now. What's the distinction here?
We have upfronted the water and sewer on numerous occasions. All the way out to Beaver Creek, Creekside, Willowwood, and then individuals, developers have paid us back either by the lot or by the acreage. Just a few months ago, at Horizons, we talked about what kind of incentives could we have for the north side to encourage development to be begin up there. And one of the things we talked about was upfronting the water and sewer. And this pure case, they would be paying us back as they pull the building permits and get ready to start building on these properties.
Now, are we talking about upfronting just to get to her site, or running, or we're paying for the water and sewer in the subdivision
site? All we're going to do is run the main line
to her property.
That is correct. Okay. Well, not to the property, but where it goes, we're going to run it from, and if I'm wrong, Larry, it goes from the Schofield property, the Perry Park property. There's water and sewer back there. We tie in there and run it up to Marion Street.
That's correct. The fact is, we already have native sewer that goes down through the old Marion Street right away. That we have to do some work on. It's an unused sewer, but it is in there.
But the interior development is all done by you. In other words, we're getting the water.
Yeah, we'd run the main line through there, stub off with our...
Okay. Yeah, that's fine.
Like we would do on any development.
I got you.
But from the meter to the individual houses, they're going to go ahead and run.
Well, I mean, there's a meter, the water lines themselves.
Yeah, but from the meter back the main line and the main line, we'd be installing those things. And the same thing with the sewer tap. If they went to a grouping of cottages, which they show in that one design, we'd just have one central sewer line going back, probably an 8-inch line, and then they'd stub off at 4 to 6-inch lines to the various units.
I don't think we're straying in terms of establishing a precedent. We've done this kind of thing to encourage development in other parts of our town. And we're doing some similar things with the Hitchcock in terms of the things we're doing at the shopping center to eliminate some problems there. So,
no, I was just concerned about running lateral interior lines. And as long as it's the trunk line and you're getting to the property line, we've done that numerous times.
Yeah. Now, the big question again is on Marion Street.
Right.
Was there anything in the Old Aiken study about Marion Street?
The Old Aiken master plan, basically, if I recall correctly, Ed, on that, is that they would like to see the streets on the north side that are one lane made into parkway streets, and to take the areas like a Marion Street, and to make it into two lanes wherever possible. That's one of the areas that we have some concern with the Old Aiken Master Plan because of the cost that would be involved in doing that. Not only cost, but you talk about change, like with the trash. I could see going along Orangeburg or Marlboro, which is one lane but a 150-foot right-of-way, cutting down the trees and trying to run two paved lanes, and then filling in the asphalt and planting trees down the center. I don't see that being done anytime in the near future. This is a short section of Marion Street from where it ends to where the Schofield Park, Perry Park, is at.
Will this require any rezoning as far as density or?
I think, Ed, that's zoned RML. I'm pretty sure that is.
All right. Is that RML on our new plan that was submitted last week?
That I couldn't tell you.
That's an important thing to...
The way that these are going to be built, it would probably even fit into the single-family home category.
But not RS, but RS6
detached.
Detached would work.
Right.
The designs look good.
Well, I think it's a good plan. I support it.
And I can remember when Marion Street was a viable street, a very attractive street to walk through. And
so we can put this developer's agreement together, thoughts again on quick deeding half of Marion Street to each property owner, or going ahead and having the city keep the 150-foot right-of-way, and we would then allow them to have a private drive going down Marion Street.
I think not deeding it to each property owner is not a good idea.
Well, that street is not, that space has not been used, and I've been here almost 50 years. I don't know what else can go in that space.
It's a matter of, do they own it and control it, or is the city going to go ahead and continue controlling that 150 feet by, say, 500 feet, and trying to maintain it in some fashion? And that's my major concern, is how do we maintain it?
But does she need it for this plan?
Our idea is that that would just be a buffer.
It would be a green space.
You're very attractive.
I don't see a standard.
The mayor asked, what do I think? And this is a little contrary to maybe what Ed thinks. Ed would like to see us maybe possibly preserve it for future. My personal feeling is, if it could be written up in the developer's agreement that they could put their driveway on it, and we give them 75 feet, but they have to keep the trees and keep it as a green space, I have no problem giving it away. Because then we don't have the liability and the maintenance of trying to go in there, and if trees fall, if they need pruning, they need all the other work that goes along with it, it becomes green space and open space for this development in the future.
I don't have a problem with that.
I think it'd be a very attractive buffer, green space there.
I think that's a good idea.
Okay. Well, I'll write up the developer's agreement, and again, it'll be on the agenda for next time.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thanks. Okay, that's all of our work session. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back for our regular meeting and get it started. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, everyone, to our City Council meeting of September 27, 2004. We're glad to see everyone here this evening. In this dry weather we're having, it's glad you came out. If you would, please stand with us for our prayer and a pledge of allegiance.
Let us please bow our heads in prayer. Our most wonderful and gracious Heavenly Father, we pause again to give you honor, glory, and praise. We pause to say thank you. Thank you for this day. Thank you for our families and our friends and the city. But most of all, dear Father, thank you for life, health, and strength. We've somehow been favored by you for us to preserve that for us, and we say thank you. We thank you, dear Father, for our city and this country. We pray, dear Father, that as our soldiers fight this war, that you protect them in every way that you can. We also ask your blessings, dear Father, with those who have been impacted by the many storms and hurricanes and tornadoes that have visited their cities. You somehow protected us, and we thank you for this. We ask that, as we discuss the business of the evening, that you go with us in our hearts and our spirit. Help us to make the best decisions that impact this city. We will always be careful to give you the glory, the honor, and the praise. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions necessary to the agenda?
Mr. Mayor, I have one deletion, and that's going to be under presentations. Tree City USA is going to have to be held off till sometime in October. The individuals were not able to make it here that were going to make that presentation.
Okay. All right. We're still a Tree City, however. Okay. Any others? If not, do we have a motion and second to approve the agenda?
Approved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. First item is consideration of the minutes of the work session of September 7th, 2004, and the work session and regular meeting of September 13th, 2004. Any changes or corrections necessary? Additions? If not, do we have a motion and a second?
Motion made, Mr. Mayor, that we approve the work session from September 7th, 2004, and September 13th, 2004.
Okay, thank you. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, pass this unanimously. Under presentations, we have one presentation. The first, the only one, is a presentation of the award for the South Carolina Parks and Recreation Association to the Parks and Recreation Department. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I'm very happy to have this presentation tonight. In year 2000, we went into the category of 25 to 50,000 population. Previous that time, we were in the other category, and we won the award so many times, they finally changed the rule that said you couldn't win it more than 2 years in a row, and they call it the Aiken rule because we won it 11 out of like 12 years. We're up against some pretty stiff competition here when you start looking at all the many communities that are in that 25 to 50,000, Myrtle Beach and Florence and Rock Hill and Simpsonville, Irmo. There's a lot of large communities, and we won it this year. And it's through the hard work of Glenn Parker, our director, and all these different staff people. And Glenn, if you would come on up, and I know you want to say a few things, don't you? Glenn would like to say a few things about this award that they received in September down at their association meeting.
Thank you, Roger. I would like to say a couple words. Our staff has worked extremely hard this year for this award. We knew when we moved up in the 25 to 50,000 category, our competition was going to be stiff when you're going up against the Rock Hills and the Irmos of the world. We have to up our level a little bit, and we challenged the staff to do some things this year, and they jumped that chance to upgrade what we do a little bit, and to be recognized for this award was quite an honor for us. But I would want to, before Brian comes up to present the award, I would want to mention at conference this year there were two other awards that came to Aiken, and although they didn't come to the city, we were a part of them. The county, Aiken County Parks and Recreation, received an award for Aiken's Taking It Off, the program where 400 or 500 folks in the community came out. We walked, we exercised, we did a lot of things, lost over 2,000 pounds. The county received an award for that, for an innovative program, and several agencies in the Aiken area collaborated on that event, and we were real proud to be a part of that. The other award went to Hitchcock Healthcare, and Pat Samuel received that, and they were recognized for what's called a special award, where we recognize the work Hitchcock does in the community, not just with what they do with the rehab, but what they do with Parks and Rec, what they do for fitness groups, and we were fortunate to bring that award back to Aiken also. So I wanted wanted to make sure council was aware of that, that we're out there partnering in the community with these good folks to provide some good programs in the community. And at that, I'll ask Brian Sanders to come up, my counterpart, I guess you will, with the county.
Okay. Thank you, Glenn.
Good evening. Mr. Mayor, honorable members of the City Council, Mr. LeDuc, it's my honor as incoming president of the South Carolina Recreation Park Association to be here tonight. Our executive director had another meeting and he couldn't be here, so I gladly stepped in. I'm always happy to come to functions like this and recognize other agencies that we can be proud of across the state, and certainly Aiken is one of them. Glenn's very humble, though, I'll tell you that, because his staff did not have to step up very much. I want y'all to know from an impartial third party that Aiken is recognized over and over and over again across state as having some of the best facilities, some of the best employees, the top-notch reputation across the state. And that's a testament not only to the support that y'all give and also the citizens' support, but also Glenn and Glenn's staff. I want to say that he didn't pay me to say that, too.
Okay.
But honestly, I see it all the time. I'm very involved in the state association, so I can say that with 100% confidence. But y'all stole a little bit of my thunder. Glenn, y'all did go up in a category this year, and you are going up against stiffer competition, but it didn't matter. You won anyway. And that's, again, a testament to the hard work that's being put in at the city level. And I'm sure proud to work with Glenn and his staff. And I'm very proud to present this to you, Mayor Kavanaugh, on behalf of the South Carolina Recreation Parks Association, for the hard work that the City of Aiken does for our field.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Glenn, come in a minute. Please. Glenn, we're proud of you and your staff. You know that. We tell you all the time, and we continue to tell you that. Thank you. Do an outstanding job. All the tournaments we're having and the Dixie World Series and all those things that y'all are doing and doing an excellent job. And this just tops it all. And here, we want you to have this. Thank you, sir. It's wonderful to go out to the some of the tournaments, some of the games, and we all do this, and talk to people. They don't know who we are, you know, and just ask them, you know, what do you think about things here? What do you think about the ballpark, the way the tournaments run and that kind of thing? And hear the wonderful things that they say, and then that's certainly a testament to what you're doing. So we thank you very much. Under old business, the first item is appointments to boards and commissions. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. We have 8 appointments, and before you tonight, 8 pending, and 5 appointments are presented to you tonight. Councilmember Sprawls would like to reappoint Ed Brohl to the Community Development Committee, Don Barnes to the General Aviation Committee. Councilman Cunning would like to recommend Charles Newton to the Environmental Committee. And Councilmember Smith would like to reappoint John Graytop to the Recreation Commission. And Council as a whole has asked that we reappoint Richard Johnson to the Election Commission. These are the 5 appointments before you tonight, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Shall we take all of these at one time? Anybody? Okay, do we have a motion?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
I second.
Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passage unanimously.
Sir, let me add that on the last meeting, we voted on an appointee for me for the Airport Commission, Mr. Bill Elkins. And Mr. Elkins is having to resign because he is being sent to Baghdad. and so I will bring you another appointee at the next meeting of the Airport Commission.
Okay. Thank you, Leslie.
I have an appointee to make to the Community Development Committee. First of all, I want to thank Robert Faulkner. He served 8 years on this committee and has done a fine job. You all know I believe in term limits, however, and I think 8 years is plenty. So I have another appointee, and I'd like to appoint Bill McGee of Fairfield Street. And I have his all of his background and resume, but my car had a flat tire. And it's sitting out on Varden Drive right now. So I'll bring it before the next meeting.
Okay, fine, Jane. Anyone else have an appointment to make or a nomination to make? Okay. We did vote on these, didn't we?
Yes.
I got off track there for a moment. Thank you. Item 2, the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance concerning golf courses. Mr. Leduc, please.
Yes, sir. I'll read this by title only. It's an ordinance amending section 4.6.6, the City of Aiken zoning ordinance. The golf course in Woodside is on property that is zoned plan unit development. According to the use categories for plan unit development, a golf course could not cut down any trees without permission by the horticulturalist. All the other golf courses in the city are under single family residential, and they have by rights the ability to cut down those trees without city's approval. We feel it's important that the golf course, whether it's because of disease or lightning or other factors, be able to have the judgment as to when they should be able to cut down these trees. And so the Planning Commission voted unanimously to amend the PUD zoning to allow that on golf courses, that they would be able to remove trees without City Council's permission. This was brought to your attention at the last meeting, and this is the second reading public hearing consideration of an ordinance allowing removal of trees on golf courses in PUD zones to be removed without city approval.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance, and if there's anyone in the audience that would like to speak to this issue, you may do so by coming up to the mic. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
So may I move that we move to amend the zoning ordinance concerning golf courses?
Second, sir.
Second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, pass this unanimously. Item 3 is a second reading public hearing of an ordinance to annex property along Pine Log Road west of Southwood Subdivision. Mr. Leduc, please.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. This is an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the City of Aiken certain property consisting of 32.66 acres of land, more or less owned by Dakari Development, and to zone the same residential single family, RS6. At the last meeting, you had a couple of changes you want to make. This is a development that is just to the west of Southwood and runs along to the south of Pine Log Road. It's 32 acres, and they would like to go ahead and put in single-family homes in that area. You stated last time that you wanted to have no more than 72 buildable lots in that 32 acres, and that there would be a 50-foot buffer left along the southwood side of this development, and that enough landscaping would be placed in that area to provide an evergreen screen 3 feet high at planting and a minimum 7 feet at maturity as determined by the city. They would also be allowed no more than 2 curb cuts on Pine Log Road, but if they only had 1 curb cut, that you would allow them to have that road to be more than 1,000 feet in length, and that they would have to go ahead and have this road stubbed out in the future to connect the adjacent property south on the subdivision plat as submitted for the Planning Department's approval, and that all these conditions would be placed on their annexation plat, the RMC office. This is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to annex property along Pine Log Road west of Southwood Subdivision. to be zoned RS6, six single-family residential, with the six conditions that we stated.
Okay, thank you, sir. Mr. Smith has something he would like to...
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Cunning has left the room. If this development goes forward, his bank, I believe, is may be involved in the financing of this project, and so to avoid the appearance of impropriety, Mr. Cunning has chosen not to participate in this discussion. And he has filed his conflict paper with the clerk.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is a second reading and public hearing of this ordinance, and if anyone would like to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration. Do we have a motion?
I move, Mr. Mayor, we approve this on second reading with the six conditions stated.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any discussion?
The first paragraph in terms of the concept plan showing 70 lots, but it's approved, but 72 buildable lots. What are we? Are we looking at 70 lots being occupied to 72?
If I recall last meeting, the plat that they showed us was 70 lots, but they may have to add a couple more lots. Again, this is just a concept plan. It's not the final plan that they may be building off of. They wanted a couple extra ones because if they lose a lot with the extra curb cut going on to Pine Log Road, that would go through one of those lots, and they would also possibly lose a lot as they were going further to the rear with the connector road. The compromise we had last time was were 72 buildable lots, even though the concept plan showed 70 lots.
Okay.
So, again, the final plan that gets submitted may look similar or may not look that similar, but they couldn't have any more than 72 lots on that plat.
Okay. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Item 4 is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend the business license ordinance regarding telecommunication services. Mr. Duke, please.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I'll read this by title only. It's an ordinance amending the business license ordinance, levying a business license tax on retail communication services. Up until this year, the City of Aiken had been charging 3% on local telephone service and 5% on long-distance service. There has been a change in the state law, which will allow us to only charge 1%. This is done through the Municipal Association. What we have in front of us is the ordinance that they're asking every city to adopt to go along with the new changes in the state law, which will allow them this year and this year only coming up to collect this tax by February 1st of 2005. After that, it'll be January 1st of the year. Mm-hmm. Again, this is something that they wanted to have a model that every city would have to meet the state law. Council did approve this at their last meeting. This is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend our business license ordinance for telecommunication services.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance, and if you'd like to speak on this ordinance, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
I have a question, but I don't know when you want it.
Can we have a motion and second first?
I'd like to move for adoption on this on second reading, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay. Okay. Discussion.
Is this, since it's now considered a business license tax, is it in the category?
Because it was adopted by state law and a percentage was set on it, it's like insurance. We have to follow what the state law is.
Okay,
and so there is not a category that it would be in.
Okay, so when we're looking at categories and stuff like that, this won't mess
anything
up. This
would not appear, neither would the insurance company.
Nothing will have to be consistent with this, is what
that
you're saying.
That is correct.
Okay.
There is no inkling that the governor would not sign this. Is that right? We're pretty sure he's going to sign it.
Well, this is why they're having February 1st of this next year for the collection period, because right now it's been sitting on his desk for 3 months. He has not signed it. It will go into law if he does not sign it. I think it's 10 days after the legislation is in effect. But it's a few days after legislation goes into effect, and at that time it becomes law, whether he signs it or not.
Roger, when it was changed, it was 3%?
3%. It was 3% on local service, 5% on long distance.
So it was reduced considerably.
This is reduced considerably.
Was it 3 years ago?
Yeah. It's about a $400,000 to $500,000 savings for the residents inside the city.
And we city residents ought to see some of that, too, on a telephone bill. So be sure and look for it. Make sure it's there. It amounts to some $450,000 to $500,000 that the city is no longer getting, that we were getting. But it's coming back to the residents.
And businesses,
yes. Yeah, right. Okay, any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Item 5 is a second reading public hearing of an ordinance to establish the Office of Ministerial Recorder. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, again, I'll read this by title only. It's an ordinance amending Section 20 of the Aiken City Code to establish the City Municipal Court Office of Ministerial Recorder. This position, if you adopt it tonight, will give the person who would be a part-time individual, we had in the budget $11,000 for this individual, planned to work 20 hours a week approximately, empowered to set and accept bonds, issue summons, subpoenas, arrest warrants, search warrants. They would have to go through a training period. There are individuals already out there that have gone through this type of thing. It's become more and more difficult to go through the magistrate's court to get these items in. As we described at the last meeting, there have been times when we would arrest a person and then have to drive around with that person in the back of the sedan, waiting to go ahead and get the proper paperwork so we could take them to the county jail, which is not a good thing because we do not have any holding facilities at our public safety building. We go through 7,000 court cases a year, and so this person will be very useful to help us with our general session court disposition and to allow us to do things more efficiently, especially with our officers that we have. As I said, it's a part-time position. As soon as we got them trained, they would start working for us, and we would then be talking to North Augusta or other municipalities that could also use our ministerial recorder if they wanted to. You did approve this at the last meeting on first reading. This is second reading and public hearing consideration of an ordinance to establish the position of Municipal Court Office of Ministerial Recorder.
Thank you, sir. This is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance. And if you'd like to speak, anyone would like to speak on this ordinance, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, the motion is made to designate a city court ministerial recorder office, creating that office for greater efficiency with how we operate.
Okay.
I'll second.
Have a second. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Item 6 is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance conveying property on Morgan Street to resident in Tool Hill. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. Again, I'll read this by title only. It's an ordinance approving the conveyance of portion of property owned by the City of Aiken located near the intersection of Morgan Street and Edgefield Avenue, being a portion of Aiken County tax parcel number 30-026.0-12-008. Council has worked with us over the last year in acquiring a number of properties in Tool Hill. This is the last piece of property to be acquired. The individual, LaShawn Merriweather, had a house there. It had been boarded up for several years and wants to rebuild in that area. We have acquired the property around her, and we would like to reconfigure several of those lots to make those adequate, not only for her, but for the new residents that will be in that area. By you approving this, we will give her a portion of our property, and in turn, she'll be giving us a portion of her property to enlarge the lots that we need to. We thought at one time we were going to have to condemn this property to do the things we want to in Tool Hill. But we have worked out an agreement, especially through the hard work of Lisa Segura and other staff members, to bring to you tonight this ordinance that we have that will convey the property and the particular stipulations that would go along with this transaction. She is ready to start building probably within the next 2 months, and she would be using the floor plans and the housing plans that we have already developed, so they would fit in with the rest of the houses that are going to be there. We're really excited about this because this is the last piece to the puzzle in doing that project. So we bring this to you tonight, asking that you approve on second reading an ordinance to adjust the property lines of the lot owned by Ms. Merriweather so that she can construct her new residence on this lot, and the city in turn can construct the homes on the three contiguous lots to the south of her property.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance. If anyone would like to speak on this ordinance, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
So moved, Mr. Mayor, that we approve this ordinance on the second reading. And I do want to add that we need to commend Lisa and Sabrina for their efforts because acquiring the properties in this area has not been easy, and this one was not easy to track down as well. So we need to commend them for their efforts there. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Do we have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Under new business, the first item is the first reading of an ordinance to annex property at 792 Henry Street. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the city of Aiken. Certain property consisting of 0.34 acres of land, more or less, owned by the estate of Maddie J. Price and located at 792 Henry Street and is zoned the same residential single-family RS-10. This and the next two items are all very similar. They're homes in the Virginia Acres subdivision. This is a property of 792 Henry Street, single-family dwelling unit. They would like to receive city services, especially now that we have sewer in that area. This is the first reading of an ordinance to annex this property at 792 Henry Street under the RS-10 zoning. And upon your consideration, a second reading and public hearing would be held at the next regularly scheduled meeting.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Second. Any discussion?
Just one point. This is not a relative.
Huh?
This is not a relative.
Okay. Okay. Anything else? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor. Okay. Passes unanimously. Item 2 is the first reading of an ordinance to annex property at 103 Clifton Street. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the city of Aiken. Certain property consisting of 0.25 acres of land, more or less, owned by Ollie and Gladys Fowler and located at 103 Clifton Street and to zone the same residential single-family RS-10. As I said, they're wanting to have city services, and this is the first reading of an ordinance to annex this property at 103 Clifton Street under the RS-10 zone. Upon your consideration, the second reading public hearing would be held at the next regularly scheduled meeting.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Second. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 3 is the first reading of an ordinance to annex property at 1726 Two-Notch Road. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to annex to the corporate limits of the city of Aiken certain property consisting of 0.27 acres of land, more or less, owned by Stephen C. King and located at 1726 Two-Notch Road and to zone the same residential single-family RS-10. As the other two, again, they're looking for city benefits. And for your consideration, this is first reading of an ordinance to annex property at 1726 Two-Notch Road on the RS-10 zoning. Upon your consideration, second reading and public hearing will be held at the next regularly scheduled meeting.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion? Second.
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passage unanimously. Item 4 is the first reading of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance regarding industrial zones. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. Again, I'll read this by title only. It's an ordinance amending the zoning ordinance regarding adding the limited manufacturing use. This one is a little more complicated than the last few that we had in the fact that at Will Run Park, it became evident to Aiken Corporation that was building this park that there currently are several different zones that are at this park. Those zones are light industrial, general business, residential, multifamily, and industrial. The property that is currently built, the spec building, is on a property that is zoned industrial, but the rest of the area needs to be zoned properly. What you have before you tonight is not for Willow Run. It can be in the future, but if you approve this on first and second reading, this would not automatically apply to Willow Run. It just gives you another new zoning that you could use in the future. That's somewhere between light industrial, which allows basically warehousing, and some very limited repair, motors and tools, etc., and some wholesale activities, and industrial, which will allow you to do any type of manufacturing that you would ever want. The Planning Commission looked at changing the use category or coming up with a new zoning category itself. They felt that a new category, which would be called limited manufacturing zone, would be better. If you adopted this, it would allow some limited manufacturing where the industrial would be heavy manufacturing. It does give in here a use table of what would be allowed underneath those particular areas. And Ed Evans is here tonight. He could explain it if you have some additional questions concerning what you would have under those particular areas. Again, if you approve this, and Willow Run would like to come back, then that would be a separate matter. But I do know that under the Old Aiken Master Plan, you're looking at some of the light industrial and some of the industrial areas, and this particular type of zoning you may want to use in some of those areas. So for your consideration tonight, this is adding a limited manufacturer zone to our zoning ordinance. Upon your consideration, a second reading and public hearing would be held at the next regularly scheduled meeting.
Okay, thank you, sir. Quick question. This does not change anybody's zoning.
No.
Does it?
This is just adding
a new... There's nothing in this zone if we approve it. There's nothing in there yet.
That is correct.
Okay.
This is adding it's kind of like having another tool in your toolbox,
right,
when trying to decide what zones you would give to certain properties that you might want to come to the city or rezone within the city.
Okay. Just wanted to clear that up, make sure. Okay. Do we have a motion and second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Do we have a second? Second? Don? Okay. Sorry. Any discussion?
I have a question. Just for my information about reading what is allowed. Which way is this list going? It goes from light industrial downward?
The heavy manufacturing would be under an industrial category. A limited manufacturing would have some noise requirements or restrictions on it. The amount of pollution that might come out of a smokestack. Other things that are going to be more allow you to have an assembly of items put together, but not what you would see under heavy manufacturing. And then your light industrial would not have any manufacturing whatsoever, and that's more for warehousing and wholesaling activities and just some repair of some items.
So I'm looking at this list, Roger. And this... Is that an I
She's
industrial or L industrial?
She's looking at this.
Which list are you looking at? This one, which gives the different uses.
Well, she was looking at this.
Looking at the category.
This one is existing, industrial and light industrial.
Ed, would you come on up, please? The one you were looking at was for really is under existing regulations, I believe.
Right. Yeah, that's what she
was. And what they're proposing is under the LM category.
See that category here?
Right, I see it.
and it is a little confusing as to what would be allowed and not allowed, and that's why Ed's here to answer, get the expert up here.
Beverly, what's your question?
My question has to do with the crematorium.
Your question is what now?
I have a question about crematoria.
Crematories.
Right at the bottom. It's not. It looks like it's not allowed, if I read it correctly.
What's SC?
Special exception.
What?
Well, it is missing a special exception.
Well, under the columellium.
A crematorium would be a special exception in limited manufacturing, which means that it requires zoning board approval. So it's not, potentially allowed.
It's not by right.
Not by right, correct.
Okay. Currently in light industrial, you could have a crematory also, but it would have to go to the BZA.
Oh, you could.
That answers my question. Thank you, Ed.
Don't leave. That's the case.
I thought they could. I had it in my mind that those could only be in industrial zones, so that's wrong.
Yeah. Crematories could only be in the industrial. They're permitted by right. They don't have to get any special permission to be in an industrial zone. In light industrial, they just need to have permission by BZA. They're not permitted by right.
What sort of manufacturing do you not allow in limited manufacturing? Things that have noxious, are chemicals, things like that.
If you go back about 10 pages in your memo, the page with proposed amendments to the zoning ordinance regarding the industrial zones, if you look on that page and you go down to the bottom under restricted industrial, and then flip over to the next page, where you have examples. Those examples try to explain what would be allowed in limited manufacturing. Fabrication of metal or metal products, including appliances, woodworking, clothing manufacturing, those kind of things. And then things that are not included are listed under number 4. So limited manufacturing would allow some type of fabrication, manufacturing, assembly of components, but not heavy industry, which would be allowed in the industrial zone.
Give me an example where we place an ailment.
Well, the first one that comes to mind is Willow Run, which is what motivated this whole idea. As far as other areas where it might go, to me it would be somewhere on the outskirts of town, or not in the existing city limits pretty much, maybe an annexation on the edge of town. I mean, and that's personal opinion. I mean, I wouldn't think you'd want this in the heart of the city.
Currently, Willow Run is part of its industrial, right? And part of it is not. Isn't that correct?
Part's industrial, part's general business, part is
residential.
R3.
Yeah,
right.
I think what the goal here is that Willow Run would become the LM
industrial.
Zoning.
That's the
so currently, right, the building that's out there right now, is it industrial?
Correct.
All right. In other words, they're trying, part of Willow Run is industrial, which you could do heavy, do whatever it is. We want to change that zoning to this zoning, which is more restrictive, but allows you to do more things than light industrial. Okay, that's basically it. So.
My problem with this, though, in light of Willow Run, is that I understood that when Willow Run came up, it was going to be a business park. We have 3 or 4 industrial parks that aren't full. And so I knew that 7 or 8 years ago, the neighbors had opposed an industrial park, am I correct, in that location. And so I thought that Willow Run, business park would be a business park with businesses, small businesses. And when I heard that Escana was going to start building a spec building, I expected it to be a building that a small business could move into, which it isn't at all. And I'm really disappointed in that, because I just think the whole park has a completely different character than I ever thought it would. This is certainly better than heavy industrial, I guess, but I still don't know that the neighbors are happy.
They're not
at all with this being an industrial park, and I have a big problem with it, because I feel like I misunderstood completely because of the name of it and what we talked about, you know, and because it was not zoned for industrial use all throughout
the building is sitting now is zoned for industrial, I believe.
Well, we were not told when that building was approved that it was going to be an industrial building. It was never said, never ever. It was going to be a spec building built by Scana for Willow Run Business Park. That's what we were told.
Well, it.
And I was dumb enough not to say, I want to see a picture of it. And I'll admit it, I didn't get a picture of it. Because if I'd seen what that thing looked like, Leslie, you've seen it. I mean, I think it's awful. And I think it looks awful out there, and it's not what we thought it was going to be. And if we're just creating this zone just to try to, I don't know what, you know, make Willow Run better, because we didn't plan it carefully enough or whatever, I'm not for it.
I think it's been said that the Aiken Corporation has really been good for the city. They've done some wonderful things, and I do have faith that this is going to eventually get itself together and be right along the mark with everything else they've done. And so I'm hoping that at least I can redeem myself a little bit by going along with this zoning, and hope that things will eventually work themselves out over there. But I'm waiting to see what it's going to look like. I'm waiting for the time when it makes us at least somewhat proud that we voted to put this thing there. But
and we do need to see a plan for that, don't we?
And we do need to see a plan. But I really would like to follow through with this and continue my faith in the Aiken Corporation, because I believe that they are going to do what was promised and what is right for the area. And so I'm going to go ahead and support this move. I'll watch it closely to make sure that whatever goes there, that we at least let the citizens in the area know before any decision's final. So I'd like to...
I thought I saw Keith.
I'm sorry, we've got him. I'm sorry?
I thought I saw Keith get up. Coons. Keith.
Okay. Let me make a comment about Willow Run Park. Right now, there has been at least one letter to the editor talking about how ugly it was and how there was no trees up there. I did get out the plans to look at what was proposed to go back in there. And when a lot of the trees got taken down during the springtime, it's not the time of the year to be planting back trees. They are required by December 1st, I believe. Is that correct? December 1 to plant back the trees along Willow Run Road, and they're going to be all magnolias that are going to be a row through there. It should definitely soften the area and beautify the area. Those trees should probably be about 15 foot tall, 1.5 to 2 inch caliber. And then the area around the detention pond will also be planted with trees and along the roadway. But right now, the current state it's in, because it's just not the time that you're going to be planting, it does not look the best. Once it gets to the point where it is sold and they do have another landscaping plan to show in and around the building and the lot itself is an approved plan with a bunch of shrubbery and grass and other trees that will be planted. And that will be taking place hopefully fairly soon.
Jane, after your comment last meeting, I went out and looked at it. You are absolutely right, and we're going to do something about it because we're trying to sell the building, and it's almost like a spec house. You can't sell a spec house that looks that bad. We've got to fix it. We've got to do it right, and you know, if we build it, they will come. We got to build it where it looks, and we have to fix those areas. The comments are right on. This change will actually help protect the area more because you could put anything in it right now on where that building is. You could put whatever heavy industry you want. So this will actually help protect the people that are there now. But you are absolutely right, and we're going to fix that on from the Aiken Corporation side. At least we'll do everything I can, and unless you speak for that, we're going to have to spend some money out there to fix it and do it right.
And Dana, thank you for pointing that out. You brought that to our attention last meeting, so thank you for pointing it out.
Any other discussion? We've got a motion and a second. Any other discussion? If not, show hands, please, all in favor. Passes unanimously on first reading. Item 5 is the first reading of an ordinance to annex property on Pine Log Road at Ridgemore Drive. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. Again, I'll read this by title only. It's an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the City of Aiken, certain property consisting of 3.48 acres of land, more or less, owned by Sarah Elizabeth Lunsford, and to zone the same residential single-family RS6. This came before the Planning Commission at their last meeting. The individuals that would like to construct this property have stated there would be no more than 13 homes. Although the property under an RS6 zone would allow you probably up to about 18 different properties or homes that would be in there. So one of the things that we have within the conditions, which is condition number one, and which was approved by the Planning Commission on a 3-2 vote, is that there would be no more than 13 homes within the development. Another condition they put on this, that there would be no curb cuts on the Pine Log Road. Condition number three, that the total of the slope of the pond would be 25 feet from the right-of-way of Cherry Hill Drive, and that each of these conditions be recorded at the RMC office. There was a lot of conversation at that meeting. I know some petitions have gone out, and there was a number of individuals that spoke at that meeting in opposition to this. There were a few homeowners surrounding it that did speak in favor of it. The other properties are all single-family homes within that area, and the developer would like to build more of a cluster type of townhomes on that property. This is the first reading of this ordinance to annex this property as a RS6 zone with those four conditions at Pine Log and Ridgemore Drive, and upon your consideration, a second reading and public hearing would be held.
Okay, thank you, sir. I think we've got a lot of people here tonight. Is anyone like to speak? Let me see your hands if you'd like to speak one way or the other on this issue. Okay, on first readings, we normally don't do this. However, if council agrees, we need to suspend the rules so that we allow folks to speak. Do we have a motion and a second to do this?
So moved.
Second. Okay, any other discussion about it? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor of suspending the rules to allow. Okay. Okay.
Can you just point out that the minister be a public hearing?
Yes. Assuming that this passes on first reading, and many times things will pass on first reading, the issues will pass on first reading to get to the regular public hearing. Now, second reading is a public hearing. You notice tonight we had second readings where we asked if you wanted to speak, and then we had a series of first readings where we didn't ask you if you wanted to speak. That's for council normally. But on issues in the past where we have a lot of folks here on first reading, we've been doing this in the past, and so that's why we did it tonight. I'd like to suggest that we have, council agrees, that we have the petitioner come up and explain to us or say whatever he wants to about the project, whatever he would like to say about it. And then we'll have comments from others in the audience.
developer?
Yeah, yes, the developer. The person who, Mr., it's Eric?
Gerstenberg.
Mr. Gerstenberg, excuse me. Excuse me for not making that clear. That's what I meant to say. And the reason for doing this is just to make it clear to everybody in the room exactly what is being said here, what they're asking to do.
Thank you for the forewarning, sir. Name is Eric Gerstenberger. Property that we're addressing is 91 Cherry Hills Drive. That's a mailing property. It's corner of Ridgemore Drive and Cherry Hills Drive, but it does have one back piece of the property that butts up to Pine Log Road. It's 3.48 acres in four parcels. It is currently zoned County RC, I think it is.
Mr. Gerstenberg, could you speak in the microphone a little bit so others can hear you?
Sure. Sorry about that. The owner, there is a house on the property, a house that is in disrepair right now. It's literally rotting away. The owner has vacated it. She has remarried and moved out of the state. She wishes to sell the property, and in order for me to buy it and develop it as I wish to, I need to have it annexed into the city at RS6. And the request is for annexation. Of course, we'll come back for approval of the project with the Planning Commission when we submit it. The intent is to build 13 luxury patio homes, price range in the $240,000 to $250,000. The size of the patio homes will be 1,600, 1,800 square foot minimum. Of course, with any house that we build, it's a case of if they wish more square footage, and we will build more square footage. There's been a lot of discussion over the past several months. This was initially submitted in June to the Planning Commission. When I first heard of objections from the neighborhood, petitions being circulated, I held a open meeting. Hounds Lake Country Club donated the ballroom, and I sent out notices to the streets in the area about a meeting to discuss this project. Erroneous information had been spread around concerning what I wanted to do, and I wanted to make sure everybody at least understood what my intent was. We had that meeting, and again, there are people left that meeting still objecting to the proposed project. The city, the Planning Commission turned it down unanimously. I then went and addressed several of the issues that were raised concerning this project. One was the desirability of patio homes. I had hired Olivia Park to do an appraisal of the neighborhood to show that it would fit in, it would sell. Question of increased traffic problems. I hired Mark Graham and Southern Partners to do a traffic study, which showed a minimum impact to traffic, and that was also reviewed by the city traffic planner, or whatever his title is, I'm sorry. In addition, I've been working with Ms. Peggy Pendon concerning covenants for this development to make sure that what we put in is consistent with Hounds Lake and the neighborhood. We're putting in a luxury homes. We have to guarantee that it's going to be a nice neighborhood. The concept of this development, I think, is consistent with the comprehensive plan. The Planning Commission recognized that and so stated. This is a small development with one street going in with sidewalks. It is downsizing for a lot of people. It's a market that is now accelerating in Aiken. retirement-type community. I think that sums it up.
I have several questions.
Sure.
One, the meeting in House Lake, how many people showed up?
I think there were about 30 people there.
Okay. The comments that I'm hearing is that this development will devalue the homes that are out there. Have you heard that statement?
Yes, I have. That's why I hired Olivia Post to do an appraisal of the proposed development. And her conclusion was, no, it definitely would not devalue it, and would most likely increase the surrounding property values.
And you're saying how many square feet would each unit have?
1,600 to 1,800 minimum, which is consistent with the covenants for the surrounding neighborhoods.
Let me ask you, would it increase the value of RS-15 homes, or just increase the value of the properties around it because more dense development could occur?
Since there's no other available property around it that would be more dense development, the appraisal is showing that it will increase with the property value surrounding the RS-15. Ms. Post is here tonight, and she can certainly address that much better than I can.
Mr. Gerstenberg, roughly how many single-family RS-15 lots can you get on that lot? Get in there.
Six to seven.
Seven. So you're talking about that would meet the RS-15 is 15,000 square feet, Roger, which is the highest. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about if it was kept in with the same density that is there surrounding
That's
it,
correct.
It would basically be RS-15, which would be seven units.
Six to seven units, yes.
Any chance that the old house can be moved and saved in any way, that moved to another site?
Not that I know of. Per se, we have not called the mover. My partners are builders. We have inspected the house. When you're having beams in the house full of dry rot, things like that, you have a major problem in the house.
Yeah.
And you're saying the range of cost for these patio homes is $240 to $250?
That's the target market, yes.
And you believe you'll be able to sell these homes?
Yes.
And they're primarily targeted the retiree type?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Mr. Christopher, what period of build-out time do you think it would take to build them out? You're talking about building two at a time.
No, we're not talking about doing two at a time, sir. We're talking about saying two ahead of sales.
So what time frame do you think it would take to complete the project?
We're hoping for 2 years, but it could easily be 2 to 3 years. The market, as Julie Sally is informing, is a very strong market for these type of homes.
Mr. Kirstenberger, at 1,600 square feet, $240,000, if my math is right, comes out about $150 a square foot.
Okay.
Is that sounds a little high to me for square footage.
And it's not our intent. Prices right now, we're looking at $130-$135 per square foot.
That gets you down to like 1,800 square feet then. At 240, 1,800 square feet, $133 per square foot, something like that. What amenities are you planning to put in each of the homes?
Ooh.
The reason I ask is, and I'll be very honest with you, I'm looking at those down the street from you at Amberley Circle, and they're selling it right at, understand what they've sold, $115 per square foot, and they have an awful lot of amenities, it seems to me. When I look at the list, and I've got the list right in front of me.
I don't know where Amberley Circle is, sir.
It's on Pine Log Road, right down by Food Lion.
Oh, the Village of Hounds Lake?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, those are townhouses.
Okay.
Where we will be single-family homes.
No.
Well, No? That may be, but these are selling for like $285. At least that's the asking price. And the one I'm looking at is 2,475 square feet, which comes out to $115 per square foot. And they've got security systems, custom cabinets, all kinds of things. So that's why I asked the question, what kind of amenities, if you want to call it that, or just what are you going to do special in these, in the patio homes that have much less size at much higher square footage? And how would they compare to...
The comparison with the village of Hounds Lake is that those are townhouses. That is a pub there. We're talking about the village there.
Is that Steve Kisner's project you're talking about?
Yes.
Is that the village at Hounds Lake?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I guess it's on Amberley Circle.
Are
the numbers
attached?
That you're quoting, sir, sounds like the village at Hounds Lake. That's
they're
what
attached.
I...
Well, it is, and I guess I'm reading Welcome to Amberley Circle, so that must be the street, I guess. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Okay. That's a street.
Difference there is townhouses versus single-family homes, detached homes, to start with. That separates your market there. As for amenities, we haven't even attempted to spec out these houses yet, sir. We have to build the house that's going to sell. I mean, that's all there is to it. We work closely with Yulee Sally on this as for what the market is, what the market price is, and what the people buying expect out of the house. Same thing that we're doing over at South Park Commons on Colony Parkway. We're building patio homes there, the 2,200 square foot range. But we have to build to the market, and we will.
Well, in the case here, I mean, you can build a very expensive small home. There's no question about that. It all depends on what you put in it. The problem here is it's a matter of what the neighborhood is now. And I'm not just talking about Cherry Hills Drive. I'm talking about the neighborhood. All draw a circle of half a mile around it, except across the fairway. The way you do these things is that patio homes and single-family homes can be compatible if it's land planned properly. The problem I got with, and I've looked at it, walked the land, and have actually, in my other life, have developed property like this. The problem with this is that we're force-feeding a patio home section in a single-family area. That's the problem. This is not to play the audience. The values would probably be all right because of the experience I have. As I know you, and you build a quality house. The problem with this is that they don't know, we don't know, and we're changing the land plan. That's the problem. In other words, if you go out there, Bob Penman, and if he was still here when he land planned it, if he'd have had that, that would have been RS-15 single family. And it's because you draw a circle all the way around.
Dependence time, that's correct, because that's what the market was at that time.
The problem that I have with Eric is the fact that this land is, if you just come in from out of town and you're doing a land plan or whatever, you're saying, what is the highest and best use as far as compatibility, but not highest and best use, what is the compatibility of this land? It is RS-15. I'm speaking from a professional side and from the land planning side. Now you can put it in there. The highest and best use to get the most money out of this, you are absolutely right. You are 100% right. The problem with this is that it's not our job or my job to make sure somebody gets the highest amount of money that they can get. Our job is to protect and make sure the neighborhoods are planned properly, and that's what this is all about.
Well, Pat, I'd also state what is the comprehensive plan then? This is consistent with the comprehensive plan.
Right now, we are debating whether the downtown area is going to be focused on detached single family, and I had to debate some with my fellow, we're saying, wait a minute, we're going to change, why not have some more attached townhomes downtown that are land planned properly? The problem I have with it, Eric, and believe me, This man can build a good house. I've seen him. Walk through him, would build a quality property here. The problem is that this use that you have right here does not fit the neighborhood. That's the problem.
And I would argue...
I mean, I'm not... that. We don't need applause. That's just... I'm talking about from a... He does a good job, and I'm not here to take you on because I've walked it, and you do a great job in your development.
Thank you for that. I would argue a map of Hounds Lake area shows you the diversity of the zoning there. From RS-15 to RS-10 to general business to multifamily, this is the map of Hounds Lake showing the zoning.
But if you go and walk around each one of those areas, you will see that there's delineation between them. There's a delineation. The villas all are looped with golf courses. This property is totally ringed with single family.
This is the view from this property at multifamily housing.
And a separation of the 16th tee.
It's a visual view. And there's no visual separation. Our property will have buffer around it. It already has buffer there. And it will continue to have that visual buffer, the trees. This is a view of the property from Cherry Hills Drive.
Walked it Sunday. Walked it all.
Yeah, you saw it.
Saw it. Hey, listen. In my past life, developed this kind of property. But I would not, if I was land planning this, I would never have put patio homes in this particular section. Wouldn't do it. It's not compatible with what's there. And that's my opinion. Yeah. And I understand why you have to do what you're doing. Because if you run through it, you know, if you run the number at 7, your lot values have to be up so high. But that's not our job. Our job is to make sure we make sure it's compatible and we try to protect it.
Can I see the other photograph?
Mr. Gerstenberg, I agree with Mr. Cunning on most of his comments. I've walked the area too, and I don't feel like that it fits the character of what's around it. You've got all single family homes around it on all sides, even across.
And that's what these will be, single family homes.
Big homes, bigger lots.
The covenants for both sections of Cherry Hills Drive states west of the property, you have a minimum of 1,800 square foot. East of the property, you have a minimum of 1,600 square foot housing. That is what the covenants for those two areas state. I am consistent with that.
Well, I don't feel like it's compatible with the character of the homes that are around it. To put 13 homes in that 3.4 acres of land, I wouldn't want to live across the street from them. You've got backyards facing Cherry Hill. Now, you say that you won't be able to see them. I don't know about that.
They have backyards.
I sure don't want to look at a backyard.
They have backyards facing multifamily housing.
Another problem that I have with it is that I'm looking at this list of people who have signed the protest against the zoning of R6. Most of these people have lived in the city of Aiken for many years. These properties have always been in the city, have they not? And they paid city taxes. And this one piece of property was kept out of the city, obviously because they didn't want to pay city taxes. I feel an obligation to the people that have paid the city taxes, frankly, to see what they want. And I have to agree with the mayor that if I were living, that the other houses appear to be large on large lots, and I just don't think this fits.
Well, Mr. Mayor, I don't know what time you went over there, but we all should have got together because I walked the property yesterday, too. So I didn't see either one of you, but... I do too. I think this is a good project, and I think there's a need for it in Aiken. I just don't think it's the right place for this project. In due respect to the neighbors and the people that have contacted me, and even in my neighborhood, I wouldn't want it over there where I live in Cameron Hills, and there's some places where this could be done probably. So I'm going to concur with Pat and the mayor.
I'd just like to comment too that Mr. Gerstenberger is also building the one in a compatible area that was approved by the city, I believe, wasn't it? South Park, which is that's the kind of area that, you know, you've got commercial around it, you've got higher density, got multifamily next to it. That's where land planning comes in and specifically on the comprehensive plan. Comprehensive plan is a guideline, and I think that's where. But to get back to the values, no question, you can build a very, very valuable patio home that's even more valuable than a single family home. The problem is what the mayor said: the property per square foot for the lots. That's the key, and it's the same. It's the homogeneity about it that you're able to look at and say this one has 20.27 of an acre. These would be even 15,000 square feet. Actually, would be on the small side of what's around it, but at least it would be the same, the highest or the single-family residential zoning that's allowed in the city of Aiken, which is what, if it's going to come in, we need to bring it in at RS-15.
Okay.
Are there any other questions right now, at least, of Mr. Gerstenberg? Because we need to allow folks to speak if they'd like to speak one way or the other on the issue. If they're not, why don't we just arbitrarily start on the right-hand side, go back and over and then back this way, and whoever would like to be first, just come up to the mic and tell us your name and where you live and what you'd like to say.
I guess that's the privilege of sitting in the front. But anyway, Joe Yannick, I live at 150 Inwood Drive, which is right off of Cherry Hills. I'm representing my wife and I. We've been a resident of the city of Aiken for over 24 years. The property was in the city when we bought the house. And as far as I know, that area had been in at least from the 1978 period forward when Bob Penland developed it as part of Hounds Lake. On August 31st, my wife and I submitted a letter to the Zoning Commission, and I would just like to give you a couple extracts out of that letter. It should be a matter of record. I assume it's with your minutes. I think our objection is that it really is going to have an irreversible effect on our neighborhood. The density, the additional traffic, I respect the fact that they had a traffic study, but if you really take a look at the lot sizes that are being proposed with the development, and if you're saying it's downsized to 13, that's at least 25 to 35 vehicles. If you take a look at Ridgemore, that street is only about 400 feet in length, and the only access then with that one cut, so to speak, on Ridgemore is now going to put tremendous amount of vehicles trying to get out to Pine Log. So we feel like it's really changing the character of the neighborhood. I just did a quick calculation earlier today. Y'all approved development, I think it was by Southwood, mm-hmm. 32 acres. This same type of proposal, if you had approved it there, would mean that you would have been approving anywhere from 120 to 160 lots in that development. I just did a quick, somebody could get a calculator and do it, but you approved 72 for those 32 or 33 acres. Based upon this proposal, you would have been approving somewhere from 120 to 160. We object to it. We think it's bad for the neighborhood, and we do not agree that it's going to do anything but depreciate our value and really be out of character for what we want for the city of Aiken in our area. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Yanni. Who would like to speak next? Yes.
Fortunately, you said a lot of what I had planned to say, so I can be brief. If I don't do this well, I'm a little bit scared and my feet are wet. So I'm just squirming. Pass it around. I have some black and whites.
Could you give us your name and address?
Oh, I'm sorry. John Burke. I live at 112 Cherry Hills. I told you I'm scared. I have black and whites. To follow that's going to be some different photographs. My main point I'm trying to make, there are no patio home developments in Hound Lake that are in a traditional neighborhood. The appraisal included Laurelwood, the bungalows, and the villas. I have also included Wood Hill. Those are the four patio home developments in Hounds Lake. Further, the appraiser looked at the village of Hounds Lake, which is on Pine Log Road, and a development in Woodsides. I'd like to go through each one of those. If we look at Laurelwood, You can see the front is on Varden Road. There are no single-family homes on Varden Road except in Laurelwood. No single-family homes except in Laurelwood. There are homes that back up to it. In North Hounds Lake, that street is 0.2 miles away from the entrance of Laurelwood. Laurelwood is zoned RS-10. If you look at the bottom, you can see right across the street from the entrance of Laurelwood are multifamily homes. It's zoned GP. The second page shows some of the homes in Laurelwood. As RS-10, the lot sizes are 10,000 square feet as opposed to 6,000 square feet for RS-6. The frontage of these homes are 75 feet as opposed to 60 feet in RS-6. However, it is unique. It's off the road in a wooded, secluded spot. So there are some unique features. Next, I'd like to look at Bungalow Village. The first two frames show the entrance to Bungalow Village. There are businesses, a doctor's office right outside the entrance of Bungalow Village. The bungalows are not set back. If we go to page 2, if you look out the Bungalow Village, you turn left, you see the office building. You have to travel 1/2 mile before you come to another home. If you turn left, the closest home to Bungalow Village is 1/2 mile on Hounds Lake Drive. If you turn right, within 3/10 mile, there are 6 homes. They are off the road. If you look at Cherry's Hills, within 3/10 mile, for the proposed development on Cherry Hills Drive alone, there are 22 homes. What do the residents across from Bungalow Village think of Bungalow Village? Page 5, petition against building patio homes on Cherry Hills. 5 of the 6 signed. Some of them wanted to come down and speak, but you didn't want to hear what they had to say. I realize they had no choice if this was built. They were promised the homes would be set off the road. There would be walking trails. The developer was going to live there. And the developer said it would improve the property value of their homes. 5 of 6 signed it. The sixth one didn't sign it. I couldn't arouse the person of that home. They weren't home. I went there 4 times. That's at 131 Hounds Lake Drive. I have attached from this month's real estate magazine, the house is for sale. We know what they would, if they would sign it or not. They are asking $227,000. That equates to $66 a square foot. The homes in the golf course in Cherry Hill sell for $90 a square foot. We go to the next development, Wood Hill. It's on the corner of Cardinal and Hitchcock Road. If you look at the second frame, you can see immediately outside the entrance to Wood Hills are multifamily homes. Page 8, you can see if you are coming out of Wood Hill, you see more multifamily homes. But there are some unique things and some good things about that. Half the homes front the golf course or the driving range. That's very unique. The proposed development fronts Cherry Hills, Ridgemore, and Pine Log Road. Page 9, let's look at the prices of the patio homes in Wood Hill. There are 3 of them within the last 2 years. Sold from a high of $70 a square foot to $52 a square foot. The development in Cherry Hills is asking $150 a square foot. Hounds Lake Villa, very unique, it has been said. They are fronted the golf course. They are surrounded by the golf course. On page 10, you see as you drive into the villas, there's a 5th fairway of dogwood. There is a home a lot away on the right hand, on the left-hand side, but that was built within the last 10 years. They chose to build a home there. Page 11, you can see many of these homes do front the golf course. And look at the view from some of these villas. Wouldn't you pay a lot to have that view? There are homes that have been built within the villa complex. Page 12, top frame, is a villa. The second two are homes that have been built after the villas. They are patio homes. They are identical. This is not a traditional neighborhood. We have seen the bungalows are not in a traditional neighborhood. Wood Hill is not in a traditional neighborhood, and Laurel Woods is not in a traditional neighborhood. Page 12, we're going to move to Woodsides. Eagle's Nest at Woodsides. First frame, you can see the entrance. It is adjacent to the east gate that enters Woodsides. The second frame, you look right, there's not a home within half a mile. Page 14, this is the entrance. The homes are set off the road. On the bottom is as you drive out, this is what you see, no homes. Page 15, I think, tells the whole thing. In the middle of the right-hand side, you see where this development is. This is zoned PUD, planned. And where do they plan to put their homes, their little patio homes? As far away from Woodsides as possible. We've seen Laurel Woods is zoned GP across the street. Wood Hill, LP across the street. Bungalow Village, you name it. GP, O, LP, R, I know, for multi-family homes, there are more zones there than you can shake a stick at. The next one we're going to look at, and you've said this, the Village of Hounds Lake. I tried to get the manager of Food Line to sign the petition. He wouldn't sign it, even though he's right next door to the Village of Hounds Lake. The Village of Hounds Lake front, Pine Log Road, next to it is Food Lion, and on one side is Hitchcock Rehabilitation Center. You have said this, page 17. This is what was used to justify the price of $150 a square foot. This is not a villa. This is a townhouse. And you get the price there, $2,475 feet equates to $115 a square foot. You can see the amenities. Page 18 shows you the layout. In addition to 2,475 feet, there's approximately 375 square feet of unheated storage that's not included. None of these patio home developments are in a traditional neighborhood. The proposed development, the courtyards of Hounds Lake, are. I'd like you to look at page 19. This is what it's going to look like. Would you like this in your neighborhood? Is this in character with the neighborhood? 3/10 of a mile on each side, there are 22 homes. There's nothing unique about it. It's not in Woodsides. It's not a townhouse. It doesn't front a golf course. It fronts Pine Log Road and Cherry Hills. The size of lots around that are anywhere from 7/10 to half an acre. Page 20 are some of the homes directly across the street. These two homes will be looking at 7 lots. How would you like to live in one of these homes and have 7 lots built, 7 small homes built across from you? page 21. The entrance is right across from this home. How do you like to have lights shining in your house all night long as cars drive out? Last page, and I move on. Page 22 again shows what these homes look like. The minute you drive into the courtyards of Hounds Lake, you run into homes. They're not offset like Woodsides or Laura Woods. The zoning around that is RS-15. Across the street, it's zoned RC. RC zoning, I wrote that there. If you're within 1,000 feet of a lot or lots, you have to have a lot that's 80% the size of the lots you're within 1,000 feet on. If you were to build a home on that piece of property, the county zoning would require 6/10 of an acre. I mean, 6/10 of an acre, acre, not 6,000 square feet as they want to put in now. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Burke, could I ask you a question?
Yes.
Have you thought about what, if this doesn't go into that piece of property, the fact that it's in the county, what could go there?
Yes, I have.
Would you like to address that or not?
County,
we just need to get that out on the table. That
if it's in the county, a church could go there. Selected exception in the city, a church could also go there. If it were RS6 or RS15, a church could also be built there. School, if it's in the, could be there. RS15, RX6, a school could still be built there. Selected exemption. Utilities, RS6, RS15, they're going to go in. Can't stop it. Transmission platforms, I guess by the city you can't have those, if I'm not sure. By the county you can. Community center, RS6, RX15, special exception, it can be put in with RS6 and RS15. Daycare could not be put in RS15, RS6, I believe. In RC it could. Please correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not an expert on zoning. Worked in a plant my whole life, so I don't know much about this stuff.
I think you're doing pretty good so far.
Stables. RC, stables can be put in for commercial use. RS6, RS15, stables could be put in for pleasure. However, one would have to ask, why would they put a stable in on Pine Log, Ridgemore, and Cherry Hills? I don't think they'd be allowed to ride on the golf course. Home businesses, RS6, RS15, special exception, home businesses can be put in. Fire station can be put in RC. It can also be put in RS15 and RS6. I see no thing on RC and RS15 or RS6 that really couldn't go in there. I mean, I just, it doesn't, the main point, I'm not prepared for all these questions.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean.
Maybe.
I thought you were well prepared. Sound like it to me.
There is no patio home development in Hounds Lake that's in a traditional neighborhood.
Yeah. So ideally what you'd like to see is a development that would be compatible to what you've got what you have.
Absolutely.
If it was RS-15, which is the highest zone of residential, then yes. The objection would have to.
You could put six good lots there.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what it is in the county right now.
Part of my point, the main point I wanted to raise and just let people know that most anything could go in there.
Yes.
If it stays in the county.
Yes.
There are only a couple of things that couldn't go there.
Yeah.
Well, so.
But also, most of those things could be allowed if it were in the city also.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I hadn't thought.
Just a question here. Do you know what, on your page 19, 58, 45, and... The homes on
Ridge. Those are the size of the acres, the lot size.
Right. Homes are there right now.
Homes are there right now.
What are the value of those homes that are there? Roughly, just give me a ballpark.
I can do more than that.
Okay.
Which one are you asking?
The three homes right across from where the entrance area is.
0.58, 0.45, and 0.57. I believe if you look right, if you get to the page, if you turn to the right of that map, mm-hmm. the second lot with 0.63,
mm-hmm.
just currently on the market, asking $246,000.
I think she was asking about these over here.
Right in front of
you. Yeah,
she's
talking
about
that. Okay.
The entrance.
The entrance, 101 Ridgemore, sold for $1,616 or $61 a square foot mm-hmm. on 5/23/2002. 5/10/29/2002. At 105 Ridgemore sold for $147 and $77 a square foot. The homes in the non-golf course side of Cherry Hills are selling at $70 a square foot, not $150. The homes in the golf course side of Cherry Hills are selling at $90 a square foot. This information is attached here.
Thank you, sir.
The appraiser said the true value of a development is its resale value. She also said the resale value mirrors the existing selling price per square foot of current homes in and around the development. That's $70.
Thank you, Mr. Burke. Who would like to speak next? Okay. Yeah. Well, we have someone coming up from the other side of the room. You could be next.
My name is Linda Lane. I live at 96 Cherry Hills Drive. Mayor Kavanaugh, I'd like to thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak this evening. And good evening, neighbors and fellow councilmen. I have been asked by my neighbors to present a petition. I have 266 signatures in opposition to this development. Our main crux of our objections is the fact that these homes are not compatible in our neighborhood. That what it is right now, the general feeling is that these homes would detract from the character that Hounds Lake has. The character is the reason why we enjoy living there. As homeowners, we're proud to say that we live in Hounds Lake.
Thank you. Thank you, Linda. Yes, sir.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, I'm David Schenken. I live at 105 Cherry Hills Drive. Moved down here about 6 years ago. I was at the first two Planning Commission meetings on this subject. The first Planning Commission rejected it outright on the grounds that building 16 to 18 houses on this property was incompatible with the neighborhood. The second one, I have no idea why they did that. R6 zoning allows 16 or 18 houses to be built here. The attorney's opinion that was supplied by the Planning Commission indicated that, notwithstanding the good intentions of Mr. Gerstenberg, and I have no reason to doubt his intentions at all, that notwithstanding his good intentions, zoning RX6 means that he can build 18 houses on this property. My concern is that because of the excess cost, that is the average patio home within Cowans Lake, according to his market survey, was on the order of $150,000, and these are going to be about $250,000, that he'll be having a product that is $100,000 more than the compatible other house. I suspect that it's unlikely they'll be able to sell. You build one, it won't sell, and then the rest of them will be built down to meet the size and availability on the lot, so that the number of houses that will actually be built on this property would be more like 16, not 13. The Planning Commission put in a restriction on this zoning as they sent it to you and said there will be no curb cut onto Pine Log Road. They didn't say anything about Cherry Hills, but the Cherry Hills cut was his first proposal. There's nothing apparently in the proposal that is given to you that prohibits him from doing a curb cut and having his entrance on Cherry Hills. He can do that if he likes, if he gets the zoning. The issue of traffic safety was brought up at the second hearing. He did hit a study. The crux of the study was that the additional traffic load generated by this development would not change the traffic classification in the neighborhood. It had nothing to do with safety. The only study that I personally conducted, I did up in Maryland on a zoning issue. And the study that I did was I went to the state police and I said, could I see all of the records of all traffic accidents within 2 years within a radius of the intersection involved? And I looked at it and discovered that almost all traffic accidents that occurred in that environment occurred at an entrance going onto a highway with a fair amount of traffic. Ridgemore gets a fair amount of traffic, and this entrance plan is directly onto Ridgemore. That means that, in fact, it will be less safe. Will it be extraordinarily unsafe? I don't know, but it will be less safe. I think previous speakers have covered the rest of what I wanted to say. If there are any questions, I'm glad to answer.
Any questions? David? Thank you, sir, very much. Thank you, David.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Richard Harrell. I live at 1039 Kismet Drive in Gem Lake, so I'm a good little distance from Cowans Lake. So I don't have a dog in this fight. But some of my friends in Cowans Lake asked me just to comment on this development to get another developer's input on what I would think of it. And that's what I plan to do rather briefly. I'm going to talk about four items. First of all, the appearance of the development, the saleability of the proposed houses, the feasibility of the undertaking, and financing the development. These are all pretty important items to me when I do development. First of all, appearance is everything. The developer shows a proposed 13 lots on his layout. Four of these are on a cul-de-sac. Those lots are rather narrow at the street, but they're sort of pie-shaped and branch out toward the back. And those four lots, I would think, you know, I could build just about any type house on. I wouldn't be restricted as to size or the type house that I wanted to build. The remaining nine lots have an average street frontage of 58 feet. If you just take all the street frontages and divide by nine, you get 58 feet. And they range from 41 feet to 70 feet. But using the 58 And considering that you have a 10-foot setback from each sideline lot, that means that your average house could be no more than 38 feet wide. Now, most people, at least in this price range, would want at least a two-car garage. And so I assume a garage, a little smaller than I usually build, but say 20 feet by 20 feet. That is the typical for smaller homes. If you include the garage in the house, in other words, just take a rectangle and take 20 by 20 out of the front so that the garage is an inherent part of the house, then, and considering 1,800 square feet heated and cooled, that house would be about 58 feet deep, 38 on the front by 58 deep. If you place the garage in the front of the house, in other words, bring it out toward the street and put the house back farther, that would give a length of 67 feet. So, depending on how you put the garage, the depth of the house would be between 58 and 67 feet. Now, I have a construction company, I also have a real estate company, and such long, narrow houses we usually refer to as shotgun type houses. Next is saleability. Now, the developer hopes to sell these houses for $240,000. And for homes, I think this has been covered, but I'll repeat it. For a home between 1,600 and 1,800 square feet on small lots, this equates to a price per square foot of between $130 and $150. The existing homes in the area, as pointed out by the previous speaker, have sold for between, I believe, $70 and $85, if I remember correctly, dollars per square foot. Well, that is quite a disparity to go from $70 to $85 per square foot, make that quantum leap to $150 per square foot, or even $140 per square foot. That's quite a disparity. And my professional opinion as a developer and as a realtor would be very difficult to sell lots of that size on such small lots in that price range in that area. Be very, very difficult to do. The development overall would be viewed as a high density cluster of relatively small houses compared to the surrounding homes that are not comparable and certainly not compatible with the homes in the surrounding area. The mayor made a very good point on that. And the idea that such homes at such prices will somehow increase the property values of all the surrounding homes, again, as a developer and as a realtor, I just simply couldn't subscribe to that. I don't think it's realistic. I think it's a pipe dream. Feasibility. It's one thing to propose a development of homes like this. It's quite another to actually sell the homes for that price. I know that very well from real estate experience. To my knowledge, I've been to all these meetings. No feasibility study has been performed. No study has been presented. And that, to me, is very fundamental when you're getting ready to start a new project. You want to find out who's going to buy these homes. If I build homes like that, who are my buyers? Where are they coming from? And I've heard various things that, well, people up north are coming down to Aiken all the time, and this is exactly the kind of house they're looking for. Well, in real estate, we have dealt with a number of these folks from up north, and believe me, all that we have met have been very shrewd in their dealings. They want to be sure they get absolute full value for their dollar, and I doubt seriously if they would consider a home like the proposed homes here over one on a nicely situated way from residential homes that they could buy for considerably less money, that are well kept, that look good, and they're established in their community already. The last item I'd like to address is the financing, which is very critical any time you want to build anything. You agree with that, Pat?
You got that right.
Bankers that I deal with would consider a development like this as a very high-risk development. Would you concur with that?
A lot of cash in it.
Okay. Typically, they probably wouldn't offer pool financing. They'd probably offer piecemeal financing. Okay, build two or three, and we'll see how they sell, and then we'll go from there. To lower the risk on a development like this, the developer would go to his banker, provide a comprehensive feasibility study, and say, here, I have two or three pre-solds. I have written contracts for you to look at. They're already sold as soon as I build them. That would cause a banker to lower the risk factor for that developer. We're not doing that in this case. The developer, as I understand him, plans to build two or three units, and when they sell, he'll build another two or three units as the bank advances money for it. But if the first two or three don't sell, the developer then probably go to Plan B. He's already got quite a bit of money invested, so he has to have an alternate plan. He would most likely then build smaller, cheaper units on the maximum number of lots he could build on. And as he himself says, this could take years. So the people in that nice, sedate community there would be putting up with construction traffic, hammering, mud on their streets for 2, 3, 4 years. That would be very disruptive to them, and would be very aggravating. So that concludes my comments. Any questions for me?
Any questions? Okay, thank you, Mr. Howard. Thank you very much. Anyone else like to speak?
Dick.
Okay, there's two more, at least.
Dick.
My name is Dean Sackett, and my wife Marilyn and I live at 80 Cherry Hills Drive. Mayor Kavanaugh and council members, thank you for the opportunity to talk to you about this. I'll be very brief and more in the form of a summary. First, we believe that this development will do serious harm to the character of our neighborhood. We chose to live there. There's more to value than the property value. There's the environment that you live in. And we chose that area because it was planned, it was residential, it was family-oriented, it was quiet, and it was established. Second, we too have concerns about the financial viability of the project. Three, the construction presents a significant challenge. It will go on for several years. It will certainly cause noise pollution in the area on a daily basis, except on Sundays. It will present environmental challenges in the form of a construction site, traffic, and people working. Fourth, there's a holding pond that's required on the property. I believe it's for runoff water. I stand on my front yard and I look up some 30 feet at where that holding pond will be located, just across the street. I'm worried. Tonight was a good test. The street was absolutely full with runoff water. I'm concerned about the design basis for that holding pond and will it handle the challenges such as a hurricane. And fifth, and perhaps most important, and one of the members mentioned it,
We're opposed to this project. We're almost unanimously opposed. Linda Lane has a petition of 260 signees who don't want the project in their neighborhood. I personally visited every house on the north side of Cherry Hills Drive from Ridgemore down to Edgewood. Somehow I got to see all of them. I was surprised. They're all absolutely opposed to the project. This is not a fancy neighborhood. The homes are not grand. They are put on larger pieces of land than it's required, but it is our neighborhood. We're citizens of Aiken. We pay taxes. We vote, and we're civic-minded. Many of us try to return to the community. We sincerely ask that you support us and reject this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sagan.
Mr. Mayor and City Council members, thank you. I'll be very brief. Summarize again. I want to echo what my good neighbors have said. I speak for my wife. I'm Dwayne McMullen, and my wife Brenda. We live at 35 Cherry Hills. There is a clear line of delineation on our side of the golf course from the other side of the golf course, and it's truly a residential neighborhood with large lots, long offsets back off the street. This would be very incompatible with that. I echo the comments that I think it would devalue the values of the property immediately adjacent to this. I used to sell real estate myself, and if I was trying to sell a house right adjacent to that, it would be a big negative to have that many houses staring down in my backyard. So I think that would be very incompatible. The traffic, I questioned the traffic study too, especially from a safety point of view. I know within the last couple of years there was a fatality, right, probably within 100 feet of where this is. There was inclement weather involved in that, I'll give you that, but the traffic has increased dramatically. I'd say 50 to 100% in the last two or three years along Pine Log Road. Aiken Elementary is right down the street from that, which it would just add to that problem. So we are very much opposed to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McMillan. Anyone else? Okay. Anyone on the other side? Okay. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration. We need a motion and a second.
Mr. We've heard quite a bit this evening from the residents. And based on what I'm hearing, I am proposing, and I know that we normally make a motion to get it to public hearing, but based on what I'm hearing, I am proposing that we deny the request to annex this property on Pine Log Road.
I second that.
Okay. All right. Any discussion?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to comment that there was not a comments about slamming the developer and the construction and all that, which I think is the way it should be. I think that the discussion was about the use of property. I thought to commend the speakers. It wasn't to slam Mr. Gerstenberger about this. It was about what's the best use of this property, and you ought to be commended on the on how you presented your case.
For the record, I would like to put in the record a telephone conversation that I had from Mrs. Robert McCallow, very simply saying that she was very, very much opposed to the small homes complex on Cherry Hills Drive. That was a very simple statement. I told her that I would make that a part of the record. She wasn't able to come tonight. And then from Abby Montagnol, there's a letter here. I won't read the whole letter, but it's opposing the project, and I'll make that a part of the record too, Sarah. Okay.
Mr. Mayor, before we vote on this, I do want to say something, and that is that I think the residents ought to be commended for the way in which they handled themselves. I agree with Mr. Cunning's assessment that the positive nature in which you went about that was to be commended. I think we have a really good developer who wants to build quality homes, and you feel this is just not the place for that. And I think you handled that in a very good way. No one's reputation seemed to have been impugned, and I just want to commend you for that, because I think it's to be commended.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to say that I've already stated how I felt about this project. I think it's a good project. I just don't think it's the right area. I'd like to thank the, probably out of the 250, the 50 residents in called and reminded me that it is my district. However, you know, I'm not making it a political move other than the fact that I wouldn't want it in my neighborhood. I've listened to the people. I've looked at the property. And I, too, am going to vote against this.
Let me add that many of the folks that came up here, I know them personally and just know normally you would not see them here unless they had a passion for something. And this is one that they have a passion for and they feel very strongly about it. And that's why they're here this evening. And so just knowing them and knowing what hot buttons pull them out, this is one. And anyone can respect what goes in your front door, your backyard, and this is what they're concerned about, having lived in those established neighborhoods for quite a long time. And we all place ourselves in situations where, what would you do? What would we do individually? And vote on this from that perspective, then we would know whether we want it in our front door or our backyard.
I would like to thank Mr. Gerstenberg, too. We exchanged emails, and he answered questions I had, and I appreciate that. And I, too, just don't feel like this is the right place for this. I know that you build an excellent home. There's no question about that. But I appreciate you're wanting to participate, wanting to build. And hopefully you'll find another spot for this project. Also, thanks for all of the citizens in Cherry Hill, in Hounds Lake, Cherry Hill, for participating. So many times we don't have a lot of participation on issues, and we appreciate that. And I'd like to say thank you for your attitudes, your patience, and just the way everything was handled. We don't always see that. Like it was tonight. So appreciate that very much. We're just here to try to do the job the best we can for our community. We all love our community. We're all trying to do the best we think we can do for it. And so thank you. Thank you all. Any other comments? Okay, we have a motion and a second to deny this request for annexation. So show of hands, please, all in favor. Passes unanimously to deny. Thank you very much. We have one more item. Yeah, there's no second hearing, no more meetings on this subject. Thank you, Roger. Good point.
I think we have a package for someone out there that left the package here. So.
Now, that's for the record.
It's a copy of the plot, right? I have copies of it. It's in here, too.
Okay, moving on to our last item under petitions and requests, a request for acceptance of a grant for the Lambeth project. Mr. Leduc, please.
Yes, sir. We have a project which has a grant involved with it. Petitioners came to us some time ago wanting to build a labyrinth over in Holton Gardens. They have given a couple of potential designs, although they like the one that was designed back around the Celtic time, and I think it's called a Petruche.
It's a chart. It's in France, not England, and it's C-H-A-R-T-R-E-S.
Okay. Whatever. Anyways, they have come up with that design that they would like. They have received a grant to go ahead and buy the materials that would go into it. And if council approves accepting that grant, we would then go ahead and take the plant materials that would be available through that $10,000 and build the labyrinth out in Holton Gardens, which would be attached to the colored garden area, which is on the western side of the gardens itself. So for your consideration tonight, this is the acceptance of a $10,000 construction grant for a labyrinth to be located in Holton Gardens.
Okay, thank you, sir.
There is no additional funding.
It would just be our labor that would be involved in the installation process for the labyrinth. Mr. Morris feels that's enough money to buy the plant material and to do the pathway that go in there.
And I think the Friends of Hopelands and My Patch are really watching out for this.
I'm sorry, I should have said that. Yeah. They have reviewed this. They're very receptive to it. We did run it by the Friends and ask them their opinion.
Do we have a motion?
So moved.
A second.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? This group's worked hard on this, getting everything together. They started about 2 years ago. I remember question they had early on. So this is going to be very nice, I think. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? It passes unanimously. Okay, that's it. We stand adjourned.
It wasn't too bad.